JMLWRadio.com network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, as always joined by Dylan.
Hi, people.
And since this is our year-end awards episode, we're going to a tradition of the Eastern Lariat, going back to a tradition that we love to cherish and that we love to continue on for the year-end awards 2020. Once again, from Post Wrestling, WH Park.
Wow, I'm so honored to be part of a tradition here at Eastern Lariat. I feel like such a part of the team. I have my Eastern Lariat hat and t-shirt. Thank you, Dylan, for sending those to me very quickly. And I'm not wearing them today, but you know, I did wear them a couple of weeks ago, so and they fit very nicely.
Nice.
Thank you. I really appreciate you buying those very stylish designs, and everyone can if you DM us or, you know, the Patreon's free to check out everybody. It's the pinned post on our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. You see all my designs, all the hats. It's $20 for shorts and $30 for hats. So no, and none of that special shipping, handling, none of that crap, no taxes. It's $20 straight up. And however that translates to whatever country you're in, we can ship anywhere in the world, too, through the magic of technology there. So please let us know if you want something, a gift that keeps on giving, truly. And I too, have shared your merchandise spree, WH, because I, too, have a Post Pro Res shirt as well, which I'm also not wearing, but it's in my closet. I could go right now and get it. It's right across from me. It's right next to my shirts I got from Japan, the autographed shirts that I posted on Twitter the other day as well. So it's right in that category. You're right next to Kento in my shirt collection.
I feel that's where I should be in the closet of Dylan Fox. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And I just want to say, like, I'm excited to be talking with you guys. It's been a while, I think. And yep. Like, I'm excited about talking about the year that was in pro res.
I just thought that our last recording that we did was on December 22 last year, so I guess right around the time for last year's year-end awards. And man, a lot has changed since, and we will be getting into that right off the bat here. But one thing I want to make clear before the show, or I want to clear up before the show, is I got a message from someone who is dealing with booking pro wrestlers for their promotion, and in context to our show last time where we talked about Tajiri being the booker of All Japan Pro Wrestling, I got the message that Tajiri has not like completely taken over the book of All Japan Pro Wrestling. It's more like Tajiri is part of a team or of a committee that is putting together all the booking for All Japan. So Shuji Ishikawa seems to still be a person that is part of the committee, and it seems to be like that Tajiri is responsible to handle certain bookings, and other bookings are taken care of by Shuji Ishikawa. And I guess if Shuji Ishikawa is part of that team, Zuwama might also be. So we can't completely blame Tajiri, but we also can't completely give absolution to the big dog Shuji Ishikawa, sadly, Dylan.
Yes, I speculated about this on the Patreon not that long ago during one of the many, many tag league shows that I've done, and this one for All Japan, but I had kind of thought that perhaps historically you have a booker maybe for the heavyweights and one for the juniors, and I think that would make some sense. You have input, obviously, from guys like Suwama, maybe Omori, who's head of something at All Japan as well, but that's all speculation. Nobody knows. But to me, it's so much easier just to blame Tajiri for everything. even with promotions he's not even in. I blame him for booking the Noah Juniors too. So why would I not blame him for stuff that he is a part of, Stringer? That's the question. I blame him for my football team, the Carolina Panthers.
That was so a great tweet.
Yeah.
I popped hard for that one.
And I will blame him for those things as well. Tajiri is the one to point the finger to. It may not be true. It may not be reality, but it's my reality, Striga. And after everything that's happened this year, especially with the Panthers and All Japan and everything else, I think that we should all let me have my moment and point the finger to Tajiri.
Maybe, Dylan, maybe Tajiri was also responsible for the Rookie Award in the 2020 Tokyo Sports Awards because they chose nobody. Much like in recent years when, I think a couple of years ago, they just didn't choose a Yoshi wrestler.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason. And this year, due to the pandemic, they didn't choose a rookie. But all other categories, they gave awards to.
These awards, and I'm so glad, because remember when we first started together and we did these year-end shows, we would always kind of center it around the Tokyo Sports Awards. Yeah. I'm glad we've expanded to have way better ones now that WH is here, because first of all, these awards are so political, it's impossible to take them seriously. So I had heard somebody say their explanation for this, and it may even be true for all I know, is that they didn't want to give an award to Dragon Gate.
Yeah,
on this whole card, which is so goofy.
I think Voice of Wrestling speculated about that.
That may be, and you know, Voice of Wrestling, shout out to them. They know their thing when it comes to these awards as well. And that's the kind of thing you have to deal with. Everything's so political. Some of the awards don't even make any sense. Remember when we used to do this? I think the first 2 or 3 years before WH came on, we'd always have to explain the the Fighting Spirit Award and what that means. And the truth
Special
is, it doesn't
service
mean
award.
Yeah, the truth is, it doesn't mean anything. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about spreading these awards and trying to kind of loosely fit it into this category, like a technique award.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so on and so forth. But even that one, it's like, there have been years where Toru Yano got votes for best technical wrestler.
Oh, he got third place this year.
Yeah, see? So it's like, it's clear that they don't follow any real guideline.
Actually tied second with Eita.
Oh, I mean, perfect. I mean, two more similar wrestlers you cannot find than Eita and Toriano.
I want to say one award really makes sense. It's the Outstanding Performance Award. It's kind of the MVP in disguise.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Let's just run through these awards.
Yeah.
We can briefly go through them.
So, as I mentioned, Outstanding Performance, Goshi Ozaki got the MVP in disguise award because, of course, he couldn't be voted MVP. Second is Zuwama, and third was Kota Ibushi. Fighting Spirit, Hirobu Takahashi. Second, Shingo Takagi. Third, Jun Akiyama. Technique Award, Tetsu Naito, ahead of Eita and Toru Yano, as I said. Best Tag Team, Takashi Sugiura and Kazushi Sakuraba. Second, Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. Third, Violent Giants. Best Bout, Katsuhiko Okada versus Tetsuya Naito from January 5, Wrestle Kingdom. Second, Goshi Ozaki versus Katsuyuki Fujita from March 29. And third, Hiromu Takahashi versus El Desperado, December 11. Women's Wrestling Award, Julia. Second, Utami Hayashishita. And third, Shihiro Hashimoto. And Most Valuable Player, that's the one, Dylan, that you worked yourself into a shoot over. Tetsuya Naito won. In the first round of voting, Tetsuya Naito and Goshi Ozaki both received 13 votes by the committee. But in the second round, Tetsuya Naito clearly won. And third here was Hiromu Takahashi.
Yeah, you know, like I said, you were totally right about Naito getting the award here. Usually I'm the more cynical person. This time, the one time I try to be optimistic, the one time I put down my cynicism, Striga, what do? This is how they do me. This is how Tokyo Sports Awards do me at the end of the day. And, yeah, you know, I mean, what can you say about some of these? Do you have any real thoughts on any of these?
I want to give you a quick advice here. In the words of the wise Homer Simpson, Dylan, you failed miserably. So what we learn from this is never try.
I think that's completely right, and I love The Simpsons, so I love that reference. Right now, you deserve an award for bringing that up. Is there some kind of? And I mean, you probably deserve it more than some of these other people. Hey, new face award? They didn't give it to anybody anyway, so why not? Well,
I'm not really a new face, but thanks for that. So I don't know, WH, is there any takeaway you have from these Tokyo Sports Awards?
No, I mean, I give as much credence to the Tokyo Sports Awards as I do, like, the PWI 500 or the Wrestling Illustrated year-end awards. They're all bullshit. I mean, like you say, it's so political. Like, how much did New Japan, like, you know, quote-unquote pay them, you know? Or I think it's designed, whatever they think is going to sell newspapers is what they put in there. So that's what it's all about. I don't know why people work themselves into a lather online about this shit, because I remember when they came out and were like, why isn't Go, like, and sorry, no offense to you, Dylan, but like, why isn't Go the MVP? It's Naito again. And then the Naito fans are all like, why don't you think it's Naito? Look at, and all the Naito defenders and New Japan defenders come out, and it's just like, I think it's amusing, but I don't really care. I'm not emotionally invested in these awards. It's like, I kind of, like, you know, taking myself out of caring about most awards shows, like, except for the ones like that I'm gonna be on, because obviously those are the ones that are valid, but yeah, everything else, no, I don't really care,
you know, except for the PWI 500. Then yes, there is a very political part to that, of course. I've been doing the weekly awards for PWI for years now, and I really put a lot of thought into that, and I do the Japanese ratings, for example. For years now, I've positioned the Open the Dream Gate champion on number 2, the Triple Crown champion on number 3, and the GHC champion on number 4. But due to Noah's year now and them rebuilding, I'm in 2021, I'm going to put the GHC champion on number 2, and the Triple Crown champion moves to position number 4, because I think that All Japan really has missed the boat in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's that's another thing. I think that's an interesting thing if you want to read into these awards, is that All Japan got shut out. And that pretty much never happens. They always try to spread it around, pretty much, if you look at the history of the awards. And Noah and New Japan, they got their share. Even DDT got an award here with Endo. I think you said
that. Yeah, they usually make sure to give one award to DDT every year.
Yeah, like I said, but what did they win last year?
Oh, wait a sec. I don't have the file open right now, but I do have the Tokyo Sports Awards 2019 right here. Just a sec. Last year they didn't win an award.
Yeah, usually they get shut out, to be honest. Like, they'll put it on Dragon Gate before DDT, usually. But, like, this year you get Endo getting this award. And they had that year where Saki Akai won the rookie award, yeah. I guess. That's the most famous DDT one that I can remember. But, you know, like I said, for All Japan not to get an award, these things are so political. Like I said, last year they gave, the Joshi award. It's clear that Bushiroad wants to push Julia as their top star of their company going forward. You know, even though she's not the champion, Utami had her year, and she's a great pick as well. But Julia has been the talk of the town, pretty much, when it comes to that. So clearly she would be the one that would get the award. Sometimes things are political. You know, like last year, Fujimoto got the award, and she actually wrote an article for Tokyo Sports at the time, you know, a weekly article for Joshi that year. I was told somebody who works for New Japan is actually on the committee for this as well, like for these awards. So it's like, there are so many crazy things about it that you have to look into. So it's not that worth getting upset about by any means. But All Japan not getting an award is a tough break for them. But it does say something about where they are on the totem pole right now, at least in terms of the, like WH said, a lot of times these things are more for publicity's sake than trying to be legitimate awards or anything like that. So yeah. Clearly the fans weren't talking too highly of All Japan this year. And, you know, we could get into it later, but I would say with pretty good reason.
I just looked it up, and actually you're right, that DDT usually gets closed out of these awards, which is interesting too. So they, with them getting a bigger share of the market, get a share of the Tokyo Sports Awards too. So that's how it works usually.
Yeah, and they have more money behind them now too.
Right. That's what I was implying there. Yeah, so that's the Tokyo Sports Awards for this year. Yeah, there's not really much to take away from that. Some of the awards, some of the names that are here listed here will be heard again in our awards. Yeah, I guess let's just get to it. And we I put out a tweet earlier today. It was a little close to our recording, so we received 6 ballots from Twitter users, from users at Poor Reviews, then at GRR Dominic, who I met at this year's 16 Karat Gold, which feels like it was in a different life, actually. And then a longtime listener, KSJ49, Fortuna Grism, Kairi Fan PW, and Steve Restel. So we'll tie them into our awards. And we have a couple of different categories, and we'll start from bottom to top. We start with best moment, and we finish, as usual, with the MVP / wrestler of the year. So since WH is the guest on this show, I'll give it to you first, WH. Best moment, give us your third, second, and first place.
Oh, I only went with like just one choice.
You only have one. That's fine too.
So for me, I got to say, like, maybe there's kind of recency bias, but I absolutely love the moment where El Desperado just said, fuck it, and took off his mask completely in his match with Hiromu Takahashi at the Best of the Super Juniors final. That just, I jumped out of my seat and was like, what? And it was just like, I'm just really happy about it. So like, that has to be my moment of the year.
I absolutely agree. That's my moment of the year as well. Him unmasking willingly was such an incredible, incredible moment. I really had goosebumps up and down my spine. I'm a big, big fan of El Desperado, and him getting this opportunity in Budokan to wrestle in the main event, and this moment will be remembered for a long, long time. And I guess that will forever define his career, I think. Dylan, how about you?
Well, it didn't take long, but I'm already going to be argumentative against you guys. And here's why I would not even... Like, I didn't even think about that in my top three. Was that your number three or number one, Strika?
My number one.
Okay, so I have three, and I'll get to that. But my issue with that is, what right away after that, because that was an awesome moment. Like, that totally made that match so much, and I'm sure we'll talk about that match a little later when we get to Best Bout. But he went right back to being El Desperado and right back into Mid-Card City after that, it feels like. And I can't imagine him moving up with the way things are looking at right now. So maybe I'll be proven wrong by this, and it'll be this remembered moment. But to me, it's like the junior division is so lame in New Japan that I could never see myself putting that as like a top moment or anything like that.
I can see that. Then once again, it's how you define the awards for yourself.
Yeah.
We should define this a bit more, I guess, and talk about that maybe next year before we do that and define more, because we could say we got to find a moment that also lasts, but that's now not how to find it.
Yeah, that's true. It is the best moment, so I mean, I guess it doesn't have to last. And that was an awesome moment. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that was admittedly that was super freaking cool. You know, in terms of an in-ring moment, that was probably one of the most memorable ones.
Yeah.
You know, so I could get behind that. If you talk about like an in-ring moment, I could get behind that. But I guess I just voted it. I looked at it a little bit differently. So I'll go to my top three here. So maybe I'm the odd one out. The more I talk about it, but first of all, my number three moment is much stupider than yours. But I could not get this moment out of my mind. And WH, you're gonna hate me for this. But I went with DDT for this, where at the end of the Konosuke Takeshita and Yoshihiko match, where Yoshihiko got blown up, I cannot imagine, because I usually hate these kind of comedy matches and comedy wrestling, but I howled when that happened. It was like 6, 7 a.m. The sun had come up for me, just like it did in that match, and it was so stupid and so cheesy that was one of my favorite comedy matches of all time, literally. I didn't put it in my match of the year rankings, but I will never forget that crazy-ass match.
Yeah, we talked about that when we had our MT Arena match of the year, and I guess that's totally deserving of that.
Yeah.
So I can get behind.
I had to put that as number three. Number two was when during Kagetsu's retirement show, when she retired. To me, that was a great moment to have so many people come out for her. And it was after, if you remember, this is probably feels like a million years ago, too, to a lot of
it
people.
Does.
Where everybody came out for her, and to lose such a person. She'd been around for over a decade in Joshi. I think a lot of people kind of forget that. But she was a true veteran and one of the people involved in Stardom heavily. And times were changing for Stardom with everything going on. Remember, last year was kind of like a whirlwind thing. The Bushiroad stuff had just come out at the end of last year. And then she retired and so much happened. Her retirement show was really emotional and kind of a crazy moment to me. So I had to shout that out. That was my number two. And number one for me was when Tetsuya Naito won the double titles at the Tokyo Dome at the end of the year. I just think that that moment had been built up for so long to so many fans. That had such a strong emotional reaction. Maybe not even the moment itself, but actually the reaction to the moment itself actually made it to me. Because so many people were so invested in that, even though, like I said, I'm personally not that big of a fan of his to where I would ever get riled up over something like that. But so many people came out and loved that moment and still talk about it to this day. And, you know, I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, what was the moment you remember going live or whatever? And whenever people that were actually there at the Dome, they always say that as, like, their favorite moment. So to me, that was my number one. I think that was the biggest one of the year.
But I was there live, Dylan, and I don't think it's my moment of the year. Maybe it's number two. I mean, I was really happy for all the people that were much happier than I was about it. Like, I expected it to happen. And I was like, oh, finally it happened. That's great. Great for him and great for all these fans who are like high-fiving each other. And even as we're leaving the Tokyo Dome, we're milling about outside of, you know, the Tokyo Dome and Tokyo Dome City. And people outside were just like, you know, people who don't know each other, but they're, you know, they're wearing LIJ t-shirts or they're wearing Naito hats or whatever. They're just like hugging each other. And that was great to see, truly. But one thing I want to defend about like Desperado unmasking was like, I think it played into the larger thing between him and Hiromu Takahashi, which, you know, like I'm very, very high on, like, and I felt it was really special that he would only have done that against Hiromu Takahashi, and it wouldn't have happened if he was facing, say, like, I don't know, like Dragon Lee, who did unmask him before, but, you know, it wouldn't have happened between him and Sho Tanaka. It would only have happened between him and Hiromu Takahashi in that context. So I thought that's why I really popped for that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was a great moment. Like I said, we'll just have to see if it has a legacy or anything. I think it was such a downer. If he had come out the next week as just himself, like I'm Kyosuke Mikami now, like Desperado's done, I think that would have been something a transcendent type of deal. But to see him just go back to being mid-card junior tag title level guy, like that kind of takes away from it, in my opinion. And it's kind of like the whole match. I'm sure we'll talk about it later on, like I said.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that's going to be hard for me to overcome personally, whereas the title moment is something that's going to live on forever, pretty much. Like, two fans of his. Like I said, and I'm not even a fan of his. I agree with you, WH, on that end, where I wasn't like, you know, at the time, I wasn't going crazy over it or anything. I was just like, oh, okay. I didn't even like that match as much as a lot of people. But the emotional reaction, I think, got to me. And maybe this Desperado moment can live on and, you know, something will happen with them. Maybe the juniors will be in for a push in 2021 to where that'll
won't.
Be something. Well, see, well, I know that. That's why I wouldn't put it as my moment of the year.
The thing that I'm surprised about, Dylan, is that you went with Tetsuya Naito, because your point usually always is that the coronation should have happened in 2018 for him in a Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. It would have been so much better if it had
exactly.
Been, yeah.
And then the second thing I'm surprised of is that you didn't mention Yoshihashi winning his first title.
Well, I mean, that was a cool moment and all, but it's a six-man title. It's kind of like the same thing with the junior titles.
Yeah, but we raved about that match.
The match was awesome.
Really went back and called it one of the best six-man tags, if not the best six-man tag in New Japan history. So I went with Yoshihashi winning his first title as my number two.
Oh, great. I think that's awesome. And I loved that match. I mean, as a match, I thought it was so good. And Doki, you know, in that match too, performed really well. You know, like that was an incredible match that they had for that. And it made such a great difference for Yoshihashi to win his first title. I think it might have been even better if Yoshihashi had actually gotten the pin to win his first title. And in fact, I don't think him winning the title was actually the match with Doki and all that, the one that we like so much. But him winning the title was its own thing, if I recall correctly. I may be wrong on this, to be honest with you. But I remember that Ishii won the fall and not Yoshihashi, so I think that might have made it a little better. But still, it's like it's the six man titles. Like that's cool. That's cool for Yoshihashi, and like as a fan of him and all. But in reality, it's like, does it really make that much of a difference? That's just kind of my feeling. But as a fan, I love that moment though. like just me personally, I freaking loved that moment. I thought it was so cool, and everybody came out too at the end. Remember, Okada was there putting the belt on him.
Exactly.
That was freaking awesome. That was a top three moment. You're right, man. I love that freaking moment.
See? And then my number three is Keisuke Okuda not turning to RED and staying with the Dragon Gate, because everything was lined up perfectly by RED for Keisuke Okuda to finally make the turn to join RED, but instead he stayed with the Dragon Gate generation, had this great hug with Benkei after not turning to RED and staying with them, and it resulted in Keisuke Okuda having this great feud with Kaito Ishida. So that's my number three.
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, because you don't really see that kind of thing where something gets teased a lot and then they actually go back on it. So it was a very well done swerve, and one that totally made sense. It wasn't just a surprise just for the sake of it. So I really like that pick. Dragon Gate has a lot of moments. I think that's something where they kind of excel at, with everything going on with the factions and things like that. They're able to produce those kind of moments that you can't. And I just want to say too that Yoshihashi match that we loved was a different match. It wasn't the one where he won, as I predicted, or as I said. It was actually against, when it was Okada, Sho, and Yano were in the final match when he won the first title, because that was at the Korakuen Hall show. But still a great moment. And this Dragon Gate moment was a great moment as well.
Yeah, I also have another one that didn't make my top three, but it was Shun Skywalker's return. It also was a great moment for Dragon Gate. So really lots of great moments. And another one is from Final Gate, as we're taping this on December 20. The Final Gate show had happened earlier today, and there was the unit disband match between RED and Toriumon. And in the end, the Toriumon unit lost, and the sad faces that you saw of Yoshino, Doi, and Genki Yoriguchi, Dragon Kid, Kness, those sad faces were a moment in and of itself, but of course not like one of the best moments, but for them, one of the worst moments of the year. still, though, great stuff there by Dragon Gate.
I always say that, you know, winning and losing in wrestling isn't what's important. It's how you make people feel. So exactly. If you make people feel good, or even have nostalgia, even if you make them feel something, even if it's negative, if you're that attached to it, it is a great moment. So I agree with you. I haven't seen that yet, but I'm going to watch it later. And maybe I'll agree with you. Maybe I'll have to make an amendment to the awards afterwards. Anything on Final Gate does not count for me, but I will amend it on Twitter if it changes my mind.
Let's see how the foreigners made you feel this year, Dylan. Who do you got for best foreigner?
No, I hate all of them. Next. No, I'm kidding. On there. I'm very interested to see how you guys go with these awards here, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
But this is an interesting one, I think. A very interesting one, because this year was so vastly different from any other year we made these choices.
Yeah, absolutely. But with the restrictions and everything going on, you kind of had to get creative a little bit, and I think I did here. First of all, I will shout out number three for me, Francesco Akira in All Japan, who's been around for much of the year and even had a chance to leave, but knowing that he couldn't come back to Japan with the restriction, he chose to stay after all. So, and I really like a lot
of his
runner.
That's a great story.
Yeah, like really cool. That's such a great story too for this guy from Italy, of all places. Another situation where All Japan finds these diamonds in the rough and things like that, and this guy comes in basically as an unknown. Last year he had a really good year too, and this year, remember, at the start of the year he had his great title challenge against Susumu Yokosuka earlier on in the year, doing some great teamwork. He got the team with Kento Miyahara throughout the year. So he's really been doing good things, and mainly as a mid-card, maybe undercard type of guy. But still, he's worked really well, and I love watching him wrestle. I think he's a great addition to the All Japan roster, and especially the junior roster. I think he's been one of my most favorite people to watch. So he was my number three.
Yeah, that's my number two pick.
Number two, I went with Jason Lee in Dragon Gate, a great tag team with Kota Minora this year. And he's somebody I've been high on. He had a lot of stuff going on, too, with the Brave Gate title earlier on in the year. So he had a really complete year throughout Dragon Gate. And I really love his work. He's been a guy I've been high on for a long time in Dragon Gate, but this year it felt like he was finally getting a real push. And the tag team run with Minora, I thought, really led to some really good things. So he was my number two. I thought he did a great job in everything he did this year. And shout out to Hong Kong Wrestling. Obviously, maybe Hong Kong bias may be in effect, but I actually think if you look at his year, he actually had a really good, strong run.
So unfortunate that his team with Minora got derailed because of Kota Minora's injury that he had before the title defense. Because otherwise, in a year where not a lot of tag teams really got a lot of shine, they could have gotten an award here.
I agree. I think that, you know, he did a great job, and they were a great team. Minora, that's another guy too, that he's not a foreigner, but that's the thing that this tag team really helped, because Minora, he's been around for a while and was doing nothing throughout the entirety of the year, and suddenly this team comes together and they just click, and they totally made it work. Like you said, they're definitely a candidate for a tag team, especially if Minora hadn't gotten, they had to pull him off because of his sickness scare that they had. But regardless, really great tag team, a really great run for Jason Lee. So good for him, number two for me. And number one, and I was thinking about this hard, because at first I kind of wanted to go with Jason, and I was thinking about it, but I had to go ultimately with the person that so many people love, 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 in Julia, the Joshi MVP award for Tokyo Sports. I will give the best foreigner award to, in my voting, because she has been so heavily pushed this year in Stardom, first of all, and clearly on the path to be their top star of the future. And actually, her wrestling, as the year went along, really, I thought, started to match her promotional abilities. She had a great feud with Tom Nakano for a while in ring, really strong matches there. And her run in the 5-star Grand Prix, I covered every show, every match, and I thought she had a really sneaky good tournament. She wasn't the first person, when you look at on paper, people I was expecting to really show out, but she was up there. She was, and probably one of the top five people in terms of pure in-ring in the tournament to me, and I really liked a lot of her work. Her versus Tom, again, was a great match in the Grand Prix as well. So it's somebody that you really have to look at as a not only success in-ring, but also in terms of the promotional backing for her. I really had to go with her as my number one.
See, I didn't really think about her because I'm not sure if she really qualifies for Best Foreigner.
She was not born in Japan, Striga.
She was not born in Japan, but she was raised in Japan.
She was not born in Japan. That's all I care about.
Okay.
She's a half foreigner, and that's all I care. She's not even fully Japanese.
That's true. That's true.
So, yeah.
Okay. WH, how about you?
Well, I mean, like you, Striga, I don't think of Julia as being a foreigner. I think of her as being Japanese. But if
have you heard her Japanese raps? Come on now. Did you see that gif on Twitter? Like, she has to count as a foreigner just for the Japanese rapping ability.
Well, no, like I think I have a leg up on, like, you know, what qualifies as being, you know, who's Japanese and stuff. Dylan, I mean, like, I did live there for almost 10 years, so
you're a foreigner too.
I know that. I'm not saying I am, but anyways, like, if I was to think about Julia as a foreigner, I would probably vote her as my number one foreigner, but I do not, so she's not on this list. But for her number three, I'm going to say Gabriel Kidd in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Nice.
I thought he acquitted himself very well. And like I tended to go with the guys who were able to stay in Japan and were in Japan for most of the year. And then number two would probably be Zack Sabre Jr. Again, he was able to stay in Japan. I thought, you know, he had a quiet year compared to most of the time he spends in Japan. But, you know, he's in one of my top matches of the year. The one where he fought Will Ospreay for the IWGP British Heavyweight title. People can say it's the Rev Pro British Heavyweight title, but it's not. It's really the IWGP British Heavyweight title. But my number one foreigner, with my criteria, is Francesco Akira, because I thought he was in Japan the whole time during the pandemic. He made himself valuable to the roster. You know, he wasn't necessarily a heavily pushed guy, but he had the match with Susumu Yokosuka that you mentioned, Dylan. And I thought he just added something to all Japan shows that I've seen him in. And and he brought, you know, like a freshness to the cards, and he brought like an energy to the cards, and I really like that you know, he's part of that great documentary, that Dojo documentary too, and I'm a bit biased about that, but for me, he's my favorite foreigner in Japan in 2020.
That's a great call. Gabriel Kidd really had a great year, especially in the unofficial Young Lion Cup during the G1 Climax. So great call. It's really difficult for New Japan in these awards, I think, because A, they didn't run any shows from March to May, and B, a lot of what they did afterwards was not really compelling. So Gabriel Kidd, I guess, qualifies here. I went in a different direction, actually. Number two is Akira Francesco, as I already said. Number three, also Jason Lee for me. And then I thought about who was able to stay like you, WH. And since I did a catch-up of Pro Wrestling Freedoms just a couple of days before we recorded this show, my number one foreigner is Violento Jack from Pro Wrestling Freedoms, Mexican, who is now living in Japan, and who has this great ability to cut promos in three languages at the same time, Japanese, Spanish, and English, which is an incredible ability. And he is an incredible deathmatch wrestler, but also in his tag team with Mamoru Sasaki, that also got a shout out in the Half Year Awards by me. He is an incredible big man, an incredible powerhouse. And for Pro Wrestling Freedoms, he's one of the best wrestlers they have. So he's getting my number one pick.
Bring on the death matches. I saw him a long time ago in Mexico. And to see him have this success in Japan is pretty crazy, but also kind of cool too. So shout out to him. You know, no problem with that pick at all.
I want to give two honorable mentions, of course, to Chris Brooks and Drew Parker, who have been there all year too. Much like Akira Francesco, they stayed in Japan throughout the pandemic and wrestled all the time. And another one that wrestled all year in Japan, and mostly in indie promotions, but also in the Big Japan, Quiet Storm, who got into the final of this year's Strong Climb tournament and is wrestling in other promotions like VKF, for example, and is having a good indie run. It now has gotten derailed a bit because he had to quarantine after Yasu Urano was infected with coronavirus, and now he has a herniated disc. But still, though, a good year for him on the indies.
Love that shout-out. I always will have love for Quiet Storm. And yes, under-expected or unexpected finalist in the Strong Climb tournament. You got to give it up for Big Quiet Storm there. More successful than maybe a lot of people might have thought he would have been after he left Noah. So good pick there. My honorable mention will have to be Yappy and Ice Ribbon.
Oh, yeah.
Doing great things, not only in the ring, but also as an ambassador, so to speak, for Ice Ribbon and opening up the English shop. Ice Ribbon's taking great steps forward in the English language world, and she is pretty much the main person behind it. So, you know, rookie wrestler, doing good things. Gotta love it. So shout out to Yappy. She's on my list as well.
That's a great shout out, too. I want to backtrack a bit here because I want to tie in our listeners for the first award that we did, Best Moment. Puro Reviews says Noah announcing the return to Budokan. And even though it was kind of telegraphed, it was a great moment.
Yeah, that's cool.
Then we have KSJ. KSJ says Best Moment, Zeus winning the Champion Carnival. See, that's another thing that was a great moment, yes, but it didn't really last at all.
Yeah, same deal with the Desperado. Like that. Like at the time, that was a really cool thing because we didn't expect him to win. I remember. So, yeah, but what it led to was like.
Kairi Fan PW, he's also known as Klabauta from Germany. His best moment is Katsushika Okada's entrance at Wrestle Kingdom Day 1. And I watched that again a couple of days ago. And yes, that entrance was absolutely incredible and stunning. And the crowd went nuts for this entrance.
Yeah, there was the glow in the dark entrance. Yep. The lights went out and the. You know, his stuff went on. That was really cool. I will give him that. I don't know if that had a lot of meaning, but just in terms of an aesthetic moment, it was freaking awesome. So I have no problem with that pick either.
I saw that live. It was fantastic.
Then the Pincente also mentions Shun Skywalker's return. that got an honorable mention by me already. So yeah, that was best moment. Then best foreigner. Let's see here.
Hey, don't forget about Steve Russell here. Oh, Saki Claus.
Sorry.
There. First of all, I wanted to shout him out earlier because I love his name on Twitter, Saki Claus. On there,
yeah,
I enjoyed that very much.
Yeah.
So his best moment was Mayu rolling down the stairs at Corcoran Hall,
I remember
which
that.
Is the best. Okay, he wins. Like he gave us the best answer.
Awesome.
That was awesome. I'm changing my vote. Forget about Naito. Mayu rolling down the stairs has to be the winner of the best moment.
Love it. Yes. So going to best foreigner. Let's see. Puro Reviews mentions Hartley Jackson. Yeah, he won the Fire Festival.
Yeah.
Then let's see. Dominic didn't mention Best Foreigner, I think. KSJ mentions Hartley Jackson as well. Wow. Two votes for the Hartley Jackson. Didn't see that coming, actually.
Big stuff for Hartley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Grissom has Best Foreigner for Chris Brooks. And then, where is he? Saki Claus. I'm just browsing Twitter while I'm trying to read this. So, Saki Claus, best foreigner.
I don't think he mentioned any.
No, there's no best foreigner. Okay. No. Yeah, that's it for best foreigner, I think. Moving on with our next award. Gonna give WH the room here again for Rookie of the Year.
Well, I have to preface this by saying, like, when we were, you know, in the DMs, we were talking about this show that, like, who's a rookie? I don't know who qualifies as a rookie.
Of course, the most confusing award of all time.
But, you know, Sri, you sent me on the right path to this website called Cage Match, and you said you can check on that website to see who's a rookie and stuff like that. And I, you know, I was only able to do kind of like a quick perusal through, like, people who are rookies. But for me, you know, I don't know if you guys are going to agree with the qualification, but for me, my rookie of the year is Saya Kamitani in Stardom. Just she's 1 year in the business and just had a hell of a year, you know, getting a huge push. She's won the tag team titles with Utami Hayashida, and she's really positioned herself as kind of like a future star for sure in that promotion.
That's a great shout out.
Why don't you take this one first, Striga? I want to hear your...
All right. Guys. So... Yeah, I kind of went back and forth with this award, but in the end, I have a top three that are composed of number three, Atsuki Aoyagi, with him getting a push in All Japan Pro Wrestling, getting new gear, and getting some shine on him as the challenger for the All Japan Junior Heavyweight title late this year. I think in October it was, and he impressed me in these situations that he got. So really good development of his. Number two for me is Dan Tamura, who got the push earlier than Atsuki Aoyagi. In the second half of 2020, kind of only did the multi-man matches, or at least in the late stages of 2020, only did the multi-man matches. But still, though, great development. He's getting more and more into the heavyweight direction, and I think he will be a great, great player for All Japan Pro Wrestling if they choose to continue pushing him, which they don't do for everybody. And my number one pick for Rookie of the Year is Kento Kubune / SB Kento. This guy had a very good run as a rookie at first, as Kento Kubune, and then they strapped the rocket underneath him, and he became SB Kento, and instantly became one of the main focal points of the R&D unit in Dragon Gate, and for his experience level, is doing a great, great job as a heel in that unit.
I think all of those are good picks. You know, and both of them, I completely agree with you, WH, on Saya. She was on my list as well. I think that she's really, like, ambitious in her wrestling, and not, she's not always the cleanest worker, but you could tell that she's always trying new things, and she's a huge project, a former idol in AKB48, and she has the great dancing entrance. It's like right away when she came in, you knew that they had big plans for her. So I think she's a great pick. And Striga, I think you were totally right on the point on all of yours. I agree, totally agree with Aoyagi. Tamura, I didn't actually have as high as Aoyagi. I think Aoyagi's impressed me a little bit more in the ring, but Tamura's really getting there as well. Here's my problem with him, though. When he went to Evolution, why are you going to go to this blue group, but you have red hair? Something's got to change there, in my opinion. That's my only criticism of Dan Tamura. That's my only criticism. Him and Sato could be a great tag team in the future if they want to go that route or have him. He really fits in too, being the underling of Suwama and Shuji, or like the student, I guess, or something like that. He's in a good spot. For me, my number one, we had this controversy again. This is the most ridiculous award when it comes to the criteria by far, and nobody knows what it is. I'm sure everybody, when they voted on this, probably had different criteria. But regardless, we were like, oh, basically how we figured it was, okay, maybe a two-year period, like from the start of 2019. And then Striga messaged me saying, we also need to count December 2018 as well. And I thought it was going to be to put in Suzu Suzuki. But you went away from that on there. You swerved me on here with the December 2018. What was that all about?
But you know who qualifies for December 2018?
Who?
Kenya Okada.
Yeah. See, you can go there too if you want. But you didn't go with him either in your top three.
I have him in my honorable mentions.
Okay. Well, then he definitely deserves that. For me, Suzu would be my number one if she's allowed. I mean, yeah, it was only one day off. Everybody's allowed. Like, whoever you want to put it is fine, as long as you don't go too crazy, I guess. But Suzu would be my number one, although she may need to be disqualified because she did lose the belt for Ice Ribbon on a train somewhere. They never got it back, so that's kind of a low point for a young champion.
Yeah.
But she did end Mayu Yuki's great title reign. And is just a wonderful talent in the ring. She's had some of the best Joshi matches of the year, and really some of the best matches with Tsukasa in March. That Mayu Yuki match was great. The Tsukushi match in September, I think, is really underrated, hidden gem, so to speak. So I really enjoy all of her work, and she had a great year in terms of winning the title, obviously. And now, even though she did lose the Infinity title, they brought back the Ice 60 title, which is back when I first started watching. So I kind of have nostalgia for this, even though it was not the greatest thing to lose the title. I had nostalgia for the new title, or the old title being brought back. Also, but somebody else I want to shout out to is worth mentioning, in my opinion, for sure. If somebody's listening to this and say, damn it, Dylan, she debuted in 2018. Like, if we don't have the Julia defense, like, all of my awards will not fully be within the lines of the rules, apparently, on this show. But if you say that, my number one would have to be Tamura Hayato in 01 JTO as well. Getting, like, this guy's super young, first of all, not even a year into his career when he won the title in 01, another promotion that is not his own promotion, trained by Taka in JTO, but he gets this big run in 01 and is now pretty much the face of their company, much more so than Toa Iwasaki, who they pushed a year ago, and that's all went down the drain this year. But but Hayato has got a substantial push and has been made into a main eventer there. And even though it's a smaller company, I think that he deserves a little bit of props to be able to get that title at such a young age. And the matches that he has wrestled, that has made tape, he's pretty much been pretty good in all of them, and I've really enjoyed him, even above someone like SB Kento, who deserves a lot of credit. He's gotten a huge push, but I think that Tamura has done a great job in his promotion as well and had really good matches, more so than someone like that. So I wanted to shout him out as well, but if you count it, Suzu would be my number one.
But Tamura is a great shout-out. I don't know how I forgot about him. If I had included him, he'd probably be my number one too, because as you just pointed out correctly, a great, great start for a rookie. Main eventing Fire Festival and 01 shows, so great stuff there. Let's look at some of the rookies that we got from the listeners. We have Kento Kubune for KSJ as well. Then for Klabauta, it's Saya Kamitani, just like you. Saki Klaus has Micah as the Rookie of the Year. Another JTO shout-out.
Oh, she's really good, too. Very, very improved at startup. Good pick.
Yep, and I guess that's it for See what Grissom has Master Huato? No, he doesn't.
A ridiculous pick. Yeah. He's not even a rookie. Yeah. Like, would he even count as a rookie?
No.
Yeah.
And as you talked about it, it's going to be ridiculous next year too, because since Tokyo Sports didn't vote for a rookie of the year, they will include this year into next year's awards too.
Oh, what? That is so stupid. You know what, Grissom?
Watering down the rookie of the year even more.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this award makes no sense. Grissom, you can vote for Watto. It's fine. But we also have the right to make fun of you because he kind of sucks as well. That's just my opinion. I watched all of his matches in that tournament. I have a right to criticize him more than these other guys out here that didn't watch that stupid tournament all the way through.
All right. I am going to continue now with most underrated.
All right.
And my number three pick already was mentioned by you, Dylan. It's Toa Iwasaki. 2019 Fire Festival finalist. Won the NWA Intercontinental Tag Team Championship with Tsukutaka Sato. And then lost everything.
Yeah.
In the Fire Festival, he didn't win a single match. He had 3 points in the end that resulted from a double countout, I think, with Yoshikatsu Yokoyama. He was pinned by Yuji Hino and then lost the NWA Intercontinental Tag Team Championship also to Yuji Hino and Quiet Storm. Now, Furikasan Tag League, he also lost in the first round and was pinned by Hide Kubota.
Yikes.
I have no words for this. The guy
welcome to 0-1, Strigger.
Welcome to 0-1, exactly. That's how you should talk about it. This guy, they should really push the guy because he's one of the few rookies they've had in recent years. But the only thing that I can see there is that they want to turn him heel, but still, though, how they've treated him this year is really puzzling.
Oh, yeah. Totally. He's a good talent. Super young guy. I think he just turned 21 this year. You know, don't know what they're doing. But it's par for the course for 0-1. Maybe he can be on the Osu shows one day. With he could face, yeah, with some of the people. He could face Terry Funk in a match, maybe. That's my dream match. Iwasaki versus Terry Funk.
Is it?
Yeah.
We need to include Teo, too.
Oh, yeah, him as well. Bring them all in there. I don't know. I don't even know what my question was. Iwasaki deserves a lot better, though. Yeah, that was a good pick.
Number two, even though that he won the BJW Tag Team title, I still think BJW needs to do much, much more with Takuya Nomura. I think he will be forever mentioned in my most underrated if they just don't like put him into the heavyweight title picture very quickly. He gets the challenge here and there, but still, the guy is so much better than this. This tag team run is great, but he deserves better, I think.
He's awesome. It just depends. This is where the interpretation of the awards can come into play, because I think everybody who knows him thinks he's awesome. Like, pretty much. I think every time we talk about him. Yeah, exactly. Like, everybody loves this guy. But yeah, in terms of push, I like what they've done with the Astronauts this year, actually, to be honest with you. You know, there's been years where I would totally agree with you, but I think that they've done a decent job with him. Like you said, though, he should be the ace of the company at the moment. You know, if you look at their roster up and down and where they've been, he should probably be near the tip top. If he's not the champion, he's gearing up for that title win, and he's not there. So I can't agree with you that. And they're a company that desperately needs somebody young like that, too, that he would be a great person. But unfortunately, we know how it goes in Big Japan. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, but everybody loves him. So it just depends on your interpretation. That's more like an under-pushed type of work. So, but I agree with you. Like, honestly, like what you said was right.
My number one probably goes into a similar direction. Underpushed may be the right term for that as well. And after my speech on our last episode, I guess it's no surprise that my number one most underrated of the year is All Japan Pro Wrestling's Yusuke Okada for all the obvious reasons.
Not for long. All Japan's.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's the obvious pick. If you judge it by that, I would say, just I love this guy. I always have. Just like we said last week, I can't even say more than I have already. But hopefully, he gets a good shot in 2021. He's desperately needed a fresh start. He's going to get it. So that's a light at the end of the tunnel. At least is that hopefully he can get a fresh start going forward.
Yep. WH, how about you?
Well, actually, I was thinking about three choices. So number three would be Yusuke Okada for, again, the obvious reasons, is super underutilized and really doesn't get talked about that much in the, larger fan base, I feel. Number two is Takuya Nomura. I agree with you in every way. Even though he's part of the tag team champions, I think he should be definitely in a higher position in the company. To me, it's inexplicable why they push Daichi Hashimoto harder over Takuya Nomura, even though Takuya Nomura is more charismatic and far more talented, and he's a true born to Big Japan's dojo system. But no, they give the push to Daichi Hashimoto, who is none of those things compared to Takuya Nomura. But my most number one underrated person who I think should be pushed harder and doesn't get talked about a lot is from All Japan, and it's Koji Iwamoto. I think just, an amazing junior heavyweight wrestler who could become a heavyweight wrestler, I feel. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best workers in that company, consistent throughout, the entire year. And also, I really feel he gets, downplayed because, one, he's a junior heavyweight, and two, he's the Jake Lee's tag team partner. And it to me, it's just forget about all those things and just push him as a single star, regardless if he's a junior or a heavyweight. And if I was up to me, he would be in that mix with, especially with Naoya and Nomura gone, he would be in that mix with Jake and Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi as kind of the youth kind of movement in the company to kind of propel the promotion forward for the next 5 to 10 years.
See, that's an interesting pick. I didn't really think about him in this category. Since we talked about him in his match on our last episode with Jake Lee and the tag team, and that Iwamoto really got a lot of shine in the Real World Tag League alongside Jake Lee, but I definitely see where you're coming from, that there is this, that you feel that there is this ceiling and you can't go above this glass ceiling that there is in All Japan for him.
Yeah, I think if they really want to try to promote younger stars, and it's debatable, looking at their booking, if that's what they want to do, but that's the future, right? Then that's what you need to do to be a successful wrestling company in any country. Then he would be one of my top picks. Him and Jake would be, of the guys who aren't Kento Miyahara, would be my top picks, to be the guys who, okay, these guys are going to be my future, Triple Crown champions, along with Yuma Aoyagi. But I would push Iwamoto a bit harder than I would Aoyagi at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see this. Dylan, what about you?
Did you say Atsuki or Yuma?
Yuma. I would push him harder than Yuma Aoyagi at this point.
Oh, I totally disagree, to be honest. I think Aoyagi is so much more charismatic than Iwamoto. Iwamoto is a great worker, but Aoyagi, to me, showed so much of that heel turn. And even in this tag team,
hold on a sec. I just want to make a point. What heel turn? He wasn't a heel, though. He just suplexed Kento after his title defense.
He had the most beautiful evil look as well afterwards. That's a moment.
Yeah, but
he,
that wasn't moments? Nothing happened with yeah. that. Beyond that, he wasn't That's a heel. True. He wrestled as a babyface for the rest of the. Beyond that, I never felt he was a heel.
He cut great promos. Remember, when he was practicing his kick move, and he said, "Oh, that's going to look so much better when it hits Kento in the face."
That's just him being funny,
Well, whatever. He was super charismatic and did a great job in his role. If you want to call him a heel, babyface, a tweener, or not available, to me, he did a great job in that, though.
I mean, love Yuma Aoyagi. I'm just saying that. I just I don't understand. What you're saying, it was a heel turn. Everyone says it's a heel turn. I'm like, it wasn't a heel turn. He didn't become a heel.
Well, regardless, he still did a great job. heel, babyface, or otherwise. And even in this tag team, clearly his character when he wrestled Kento is different than it is now, teaming with Nextreme. I don't know whatever you want to call it. Either way, he did a great job. And I think he's got a ton of potential. He's one of my favorite guys there, besides Okada. Iwamoto's a good worker. Don't get me wrong, but I guess, and he did, like you said, Striga, he did get a lot of shine in that match and totally succeeded in that tag league. You know, I would say like every opportunity they've given him, he succeeded. But I would pick Aoyagi over him overall if you look at it. But you know, Iwamoto, like these guys, you guys are picking Iwamoto, Nomura. These guys have won titles this year. So I agree with both of your points, but it's kind of interesting that those are the first people you think of. To me, somebody like underrated in that sense would have been like a Yoshihashi. Or someone who had never won the title. He did win the title eventually, which
I was going to say.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick him in mind. But like, if he hadn't won the title, he'd be like, okay, this is probably somebody who's been one of your best workers, and he has no hope of doing anything. Like, he was at the bottom of the barrel in your block. You know, those guys aren't bottom of the barrel guys in their companies. Like, you know, you're good. But I mean, I agree with your points, though. At the end of the day, I don't agree that he would be better than Aoyagi on a pick Iwamoto. But for me. Let's get into my crazy picks,
yes.
And we'll see here, because I had a lot of, I thought it would be more fun, because at first I thought about it like you guys did, maybe the most underpushed type of person. I think that's the most traditional route. If you look at a lot of the votes that we got, people voted it like that. So I went the other route, just to be different, I hear. And it's people that I think are underrated in terms of just being underrated. Like, they don't get talked about enough, in my opinion. Or if they do get talked about, it's like some people think they're bad, but I actually think they're good, pretty much. So, first of all, I had to go with my legacy candidate for this award, and it had to be Kai in Dragon Gate. And even for me, and I have to say, even I underrated him, so perhaps he should be number one, because usually I'm on board on his train. But if you look at him in Dragon Gate, when he came in, I kept thinking, this really isn't a good fit for him and his style and his strengths. And when he turned heel, we talked about that. I was like, man, him and RED, what? Like, this isn't what I want to see out of Kai. But then we had the team on paper that looked like it was going to die a death between him and BB Hulk. I was so unexcited about their team. But their matches have been good. Like, they've been way over my expectations. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. A lot of the Dragon Gate fans. When it comes to him, because I think everybody knows BB Hulk is just totally toast at the end of the day. And Kai has really carried that team, his brawling section with Yamato and that match that had to get reshuffled around with Minoru. Yeah, they had the other match afterwards for the tag team titles. And this tag team title reign, I'm not going to say they're the greatest team ever or anything like that, but when your partner is BB Hulk, who's like a lump at this point, like a big red-haired lump is BB Hulk at this point, who throws axe kicks. That's like his only move. And then you have Kai carrying this team. He's made it work. I have to consider him the one that people don't give enough credit to, because he's made everything that he's done, whether teaming with Yamato last year, this year in Dragon Gate as the diehard representative of Team Dragon Gate, or now as a heel even with his horrible hair that he has. I think he's made it work. So that's somebody I think is truly underrated.
Before you go on with your other picks, I got to turn the tables on you, Dylan, because you have made the speech about how we chose people that won a championship, and then you choose someone who has won a championship.
I'm not grading it by the same criteria as you are, though. I said that.
I'm not sure about that.
This is people who, like, I don't care if they're pushed or underpushed. Like, that has nothing to do with it. If they won 20 titles, that's fine. I'm saying underrated is that people don't give them enough credit for their level of performer. Like, Nomura, everybody loves. Like, okay, who do you know that says Takuya Nomura sucks?
I see.
Like,
I see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like, see, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not even grading by that criteria. So it's a totally different thing here. My point is, Kai is underrated in ring and as a performer. Number two, another favorite of mine. Another deep indie pick here. But look at his match. Even, like, no matter what match he's in, whether he's getting a singles push or in a completely irrelevant opening tag team match, I have to go with my boy Hub from 0-1.
Wow.
This man never gets enough credit as one of the top junior heavyweights in Japan. I said this, I remember we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying, if you really look at the scene in Japan,
yeah,
I would put him as like a top 10 to 15 junior heavyweight in the entire country.
Believe it or not, that's a great pick. I love it.
Yeah, so see, and his team with Gaina, if you're doing a tag team run, remember that match they had in the Big Japan show last month? That was one of the best matches on the show. It was totally meaningless opening match.
Yeah, it was a great match.
It was. Like, I mean, this guy rules. Like, he great junior heavyweight, put him against any opponent. Very unique style too. He's not just a high flyer type of guy. You know, he works so many different styles. Great performer, in my opinion. I think he's somebody that never gets enough credit.
I'm gonna have a similar pick when it goes to best tag team. So great shout out by you there.
All right.
So looking at some of the ballots we got, yeah. Puro Reviews mentions Toru Sugiura in Pro Wrestling Freedoms. I wouldn't really mention him as underrated because he has been the King of Freedoms champion for basically all year.
See, that's the thing. Like this category, I think he might have been thinking more like I was trying to.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Like maybe he doesn't get a love. So it depends on your category. I think if you could look at it one way or the other, maybe there's somebody like if somebody said like Tetsuya Naito is underrated. I don't think that would be a good pick to be honest in any way for this. But otherwise, you know, I can buy that if you're looking at it that way. But he's getting a run in Noah. Let's see what he could do.
No, that's Yuya Susumu.
Oh yeah, sorry.
How about KSJ's pick, Dylan? Underrated Hiragi Kurumi from Ice Ribbon.
Yeah, like she's super underrated. Like we didn't even get to my number one, but I had a Joshi pick too. I'll briefly go through this. Pure J Ace, my beloved Pure J, Hanako Nakamori.
Oh, great pick.
I love her wrestling, and she had one of the best Joshi matches of the year versus Lyon in August. I highly recommend. I think it actually happened in July, but it aired in August. So if you look at it, you might have to look at two different dates. But regardless, Hanako Nakamori Lyon, one of the best matches. Love her, and without her, that company has nothing, pretty much. So I really love everything she does. I think she deserves a lot more credit. She never gets mentioned as like one of the top people because she's in such a small company. So I really... would like to shout her out. I think she deserves more credit. On Kurumi, totally agree. She had a title match in March, which was really good versus Maya Yuki. She's somebody who's been around for a while, but is still like not even 20 years old yet. So, you know, started out very young, unique look, and a great fit for Ice Ribbon. So interesting pick there. Really like it.
Another Yoshi pick from Klabauta. He mentions as most underrated Momo Watanabe.
Maybe if like how you guys were saying about the push,
yeah.
That would be it because she hasn't won anything. But everybody I know thinks she's a great wrestler. So like she's kind of like the Nomura of your, like how you were saying about her. But she doesn't get picked, and she's somebody that everybody loves too, and like wants to get that push. But I don't know. I mean, I like her. To me, if I were picking someone for Stardom like that, it would be Jungle over her personally.
Yeah. Then we also have Zeus as a pick by the Pensente, and Grism picked Yuki Ueno. In both cases, those two also won tournaments and titles in their promotion, so I wouldn't really value them as underrated.
And they're not even underrated in ring. Like, who thinks Zeus sucks?
Yeah,
like you know.
That's a 2015 take.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, like I agree with you, Striga.
I kind of think, like, based on Dylan's criteria for this award, it should be called most underestimated rather than most underrated.
Yeah.
Maybe most underutilized, underrated, underutilized. Like, so many under awards.
Something like that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, to me, like, clearly we've seen a divide with people who voted here. Like, it just depends on how you want to say the award. But for your, like, if I'll give you guys' this criteria a chance, too. And, like, if I were to pick, it would definitely have to be Okada. That you pick, Striga. I would agree with your pick number one if you're going by that criteria. You know, like when you get pushed so bad that you end up leaving the company, that makes you kind of a shoo-in in my book. So I would actually agree with your pick if we're going by that criteria. It just depends on how you want to grade it.
So why don't you just continue, Andelin? Most improved.
Sure, I would be happy to. Most improved. These kind of awards are actually some of my favorite ones. I know everybody loves like the match of the year and all of that, the wrestler of the year, but these awards are actually the ones I really like because you get kind of under the radar people like a Hanako or a Hub or a Kai and, in my picks or anybody. Like even Takuya Nomura always deserves more credit when it comes to that. Iwamoto, longtime junior in All Japan. So you can really go a lot of different ways. Most improved is the man I just, my number three was the man I just made a passionate defense for in All Japan, Yuma Aoyagi, who I think really, and he's somebody I always liked. And at the end of the year last year, I thought he did a great job in the team. But when he got his push against Kenta on his title shot, he showed that he could be a main event player in the company, even in the Champion Carnival, which is a tournament that I think a lot of people didn't like at the end of the day. I thought he was one of the most consistent and interesting people in it. So, like, in any situation, he had a great match with Ashino in June that got underrated. I think kind of lost in the shuffle. Was a part of the great tag match in April. Anything that was good in All Japan, it's like his fingerprints were on it like throughout the year, pretty much, outside of that little brief Infants push. And even then, he had a match with Ashino. So it's like he was everywhere. Good things were happening in the promotion. One of the top teams with Kento. And in that tag league, he was the one carrying that team. It wasn't Kento doing the great work in that team. So to me, he would be up there as an improved candidate from last year. Because I always liked him as a worker, but I think he proved that he could be a top-tier talent for All Japan. Just as much as someone like a Jake Lee or Nomura, who unfortunately got injured.
I want to say that KSJ also picked Yuma Aoyagi and Dylan. That's my number one pick as well, but just for the reasons that you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. He's not my number one, so I'll blow through these other two. Okay. But he's my number three. Two other people. Now, here's the thing. I always liked him, which is the difference between him and number two for me. I have to go with Saki Akai in Tokyo Joshi Pro, because this is somebody I never really liked at all. Last year, I started to come around as a character on, because I thought her work with Misao was really good. They had a really good run with the tag team. Let Misao do her work, and Akai could do the promos and charisma and character stuff. But this year, she actually started to have good matches, whether in Eruption and DDT or in Tokyo Joshi Pro with her 7-match series. Now, keep in mind, they did put her against like some of the best workers in Joshi for those series, but I think it was a great move because it really helped her. And, you know, it all climaxed with her match with Meiko Satomura, which I thought was legitimately really good, one of the top 10 matches of that month. And that's something I never would have imagined, you know, a year and a half ago, pretty much. Like, she would be one of my least favorite people, or least favorite performers. Nothing against her as a person, just as a performer. But here in 2020, I think she's had a legitimately good year. And that's something I never would have expected going in. So for improved, she had to be way up there for me.
I stole that one from you because you mentioned it in our half-year awards, and I was much like the when you mentioned Hayato Tamura before, I completely missed the boat on her in our half-year awards, and I made sure to include her into my top three list this time.
Wonderful. Nice. And I'm glad we could influence each other, Stringer. Like I said, you with the Yoshihashi moment of the year and me with Saki Akai and Hayato Tamura. So number one for me is Yuya Aoki in Big Japan Pro Wrestling. And again, much like Aoyagi, he's another guy. It's like I've always liked him. Remember, when he got that title, the division was basically dead. You know, it felt like such a lame duck thing when he won the title. And I was like, man, how is he going to pull this off? And then he went on and had an incredible year and was arguably one of the best people in Big Japan. If you look at his run, you know, look at his list of matches all the way down to not that long ago when he was in 2AW. He had a great match with Tatsuya Hanami, which I know is somebody you really love, Striga.
Yep.
And I thought that was an incredible performance by him. He's done so much great work, regardless of the situation he's put in. And he, to me, out of all these people, between Aoyagi, Saki, and him, he was in the most difficult spot. Because you knew Akai was going to get pushed at DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro. Aoyagi, they basically had no choice but to put him in some kind of role, even though they didn't do a great job pushing him. He still was up there throughout the year. Aoki, it's like the junior champion of Big Japan was about as low on the totem pole as you could get. and he made it work. And he improved everything and had great matches up and down, all the way back to the Strong Climb, all the way back to February. I love his year. I think he's somebody that deserves a lot of credit. So Yuya Aoki, my number one, most improved. And I already liked him, but I thought he really took a big step up this year.
No disagreements with you here. I got the three same names on my list, just in a different order.
Saki, just reverse order, huh?
Yeah, Saki Akai 3, Yuya Aoki 2, Yuma Aoyagi number 1. Also got some honorable mentions in Yuki Ueno, Dragon Dyer, Den Tamura, and Hokuto Omori.
Good
and
picks.
WH, how about you?
Well, I have three completely different names. Number three is one of your honorable mentions. It's Hokuto Omori. I just think this guy developed this personality, like, and it improved his in-ring work. And
the North
I just think,
Wolf, baby. You can't disrespect the North Wolf.
He got the gimmick, and like joining Enfants has been great for him as well. And I just think of, like, you know, his class. I guess Tamura and I guess Atsuki Aoyagi, to some degree, is part of his class. He's the most promising as far as like his character goes and his in-ring. So I think he's improved a lot. My number two pick is Himeka Arita in Stardom. I had seen her before in like various shows, like actress girls shows. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd seen her and I thought, yeah, she's okay. I never really thought much of her. But when she got into Stardom and she got the push, especially in the five-star, and I thought, wow, she's really good. And like, yeah. I'm hoping 2021 is like a really big year for her. I think she's going to deserve it. But I my number one pick, I don't think either of you are going to agree with this because you probably think he's already good, but I pick Kaito Kiyomiya as my most improved because, and Dylan, before you like have an aneurysm, just hear me out. Like, I know you love this guy. You think he's the ace of the company, but when he was pushed as ace, when he was the GHC heavyweight champion, I never bought it. I just thought this guy does not act like an ace. He doesn't act like a champion. I thought he was over pushed, but when he lost that title and he kind of started rebuilding himself, I started seeing something in his character, like where he's starting to elevate himself, his persona, to match like the push that he was given. And if he wins the title again, which I'm sure he will, like I feel it will be more deserving at this time. So like for me, most improved is Kaito Kiyomiya.
I think you're not the only one who thinks that about Kaito, but I think history has proven me right, like pretty much. Like it's kind of been on my side because it's like, what more do you want this guy to do? At the end of the day,
I want him to carry himself more as a champion. That's what I want him to do.
Well, I mean, I don't know. They did a great job in Sumo Hall that nobody expected him to do as champion against a really lame challenger on top of it that I know you even you agree with.
No, I yeah, but like throughout most of his title reign, not all of it, but most of his title reign, I just didn't buy him as the champion or the ace of the company. And I feel like he's kind of improved that. You know what I mean? So like to me, and I believe because in his position, I think he has to show improvement. And like to me, he's shown it. Yeah. So like based on his position though in his company and in the overall scene, I think he's the most improved because he means the most out of the other people that we've talked about, I feel.
Well, I agree with that.
I think it really comes with experience that you really learn to carry yourself in whatever position you're put in. And I can see that point from your perspective, WH, that Kaito has really grown in that aspect.
I think he's had a great year in ring work as well. Never mind him carrying himself. I think he's done a great job against a variety of people as well. And I actually think, like compared to the other aces, again, I actually think he's better than most of the other ones. Because if you look at a lot of these other guys, like an Okada or a Kento, if they're not in the title scene, what are they doing? Like, and it's nothing interesting. But with Kaito, he's made it work.
And that we're talking about Kaito Kiyomiya now, I had to think about another one that maybe qualifies for underrated or undervalued, underused, Daiki Inaba. What about him?
Oh, yeah.
He's a great guy, but Noah really doesn't use them really good or even at all.
The funny thing is, when he was champion of Wrestle 1, a lot of people really weren't on his side. Like, you know, like they were kind of talking down about him that he wasn't that great of a champion. But I always liked him. I thought he was a really good champion, actually. I wanted to see him do more in Noah. But unfortunately, like you said, he's a great young guy if they would get behind him a little bit. I thought they had something with him and Kaito as a tag team, actually, earlier in the year. They had that little match, which I thought was a really good match, too. They had Kaito and Inaba, but unfortunately, they never went anywhere with it.
And now the tag team is Kaito and Yoshi Inamura.
Yeah, pretty much. He kind of got passed over, but I hope in 2021 he gets a chance, at least, because I think he can deliver if they put him in a spotlight of some sort. Like, even if it's not a spotlight, if it's just a mid-card role, I think he would do good in, but unfortunately, that's not in the cards.
He would. Let's look at some of our ballots. We just received another one as we're talking right now from the user at YankeeM, and he mentions as the most improved as well, Yuya Aoki. And I gotta look some of the others here. Pinsente mentions Misuki of Tokiyoshi Pro. Saki Klaus has Saya Kamitani from Stardom. Then Klabauta has Hanan, also from Stardom. Great pick, too.
That's a good pick. Yeah, I like that.
Grissom. Let's see what Grissom has most improved. Oh, also Saya Kamitani. A lot of votes behind Saya Kamitani.
That was one of your picks earlier, WH. You had the vision. right now.
There you go.
Hey, who's taller, Tall Saya or Lady C?
I don't know. I think it's that new one, Lady C, right?
Yeah, I think it is. But that's a big Twitter debate right now. Let's not get hasty with anything.
Then an interesting pick by Puro Reviews, Strong Machine J as most improved. Yeah, I see that. I thought that he really improved earlier this year, but it's not really that he has done all that much in the second half of this year.
They need to send him in for upgrades.
Yes.
I guess you could say. They need to upgrade his wiring.
Right, upgrade his wiring. He needs an oil change.
Yes.
And then return from the factory, baby.
Yes, if that happens, I will buy that pick as most improved. but until then, until we get that update from Jay or Ho-Ho Loon, I will not buy that.
All right, let's continue here on with our next award with Best Rivalry. And WH, why don't you go first?
Okay, so I don't watch as much Dragon Gate as either of you, but you know what I do catch, like I was really impressed with something you had mentioned, Sri, I think. It was the Keisuke Okuda versus Kaito Ishida feud. I thought just really heated and just produced some really good angles and matches between those two. So that was my number three. Number two is Hiromu Takahashi versus El Desperado. Even though they didn't interact that much, they did have two matches this year, both part of the Best of the Super Juniors. They just, you know, they always have that context to their rivalry that whenever it pops up, just like I just fall in love with it all over again. But my number one rivalry is in Stardom. It's Julia versus Tam Nakano. Just some questionable angles that they did, but like overall, like they just have, like anytime these two interact, you just feel this hatred, and that's to me very important in having a rivalry, and it produces great matches as well. And I can see this just continuing in the future, like Tam and Julia being married as like hated rivals with each other can be up there with, like, you know, I don't know, like maybe Mayu versus Io Shirai, you know, like as kind of the Stardom rivalry to carry the company into the future.
Yeah, see, you know, the lack of Stardom on my list really has to do with me not really watching Stardom all year. But I can see that. I can see your picks there. And I agree with number three. I also have that on number three. In a little different role, I mentioned specifically also the Keisuke Okuda versus Kaito Ishida feud, but more so I thought that the Dragon Gate versus RED rivalry this year overall was really done well, and Okuda versus Ishida is a great example of just that. So my number two, I picked a rivalry from Dragon Gate that also was kind of a stable rivalry in All Out versus Junretsu, but more so Konosuke Takeshita versus Jun Akiyama that culminated in that great match that they had at DDT Ultimate Party. And I do think that there is much more that they can do with one another down the line, much like in Julia and Tam that you mentioned, WH. And number one, even though that the turn, in our opinion, Dylan and I talked about it, was very premature. It resulted in an incredible, incredible match. Goshi Ozaki versus Katsuhiko Nakajima is my number one pick here.
That had the most emotional response after the turn, even though, exactly, like you said, we both thought it was a little early. But yeah, that when that turn happened, that had such a response. Again, kind of like what I said about Naito winning the titles. That's something that I always look for in wrestling in general, to see what the general response is. And that definitely did do it. I do think that, unfortunately, with how things played out, it kind of took it down a notch. Because it's like, okay, go just one. And I think that, you know, like it was kind of a weak ending. Even though the match itself was a great match, I totally agree with you. And I love the ending of it, too, once I was able to watch it after they cut off the video live as well. But, you know, like the feud itself was really well done, though. It got a lot of energy, a lot of emotion behind it. So, and just a thing where you have this tag team that's beloved by so many people, and to split them apart is always a big deal. You know, it's interesting that you went there with that, because I thought that was such a disappointment how the feud actually played out, all in all. But the initial turn, I think if you wanted to go by the emotional reaction, that would be the one to point to.
It's also voted by a lot of our listeners as the best rivalry We also got from Yankin M, we have All Out versus Junretsu that I also mentioned before, but overall, the listeners also voted Shiozaki and Nakajima as the best rivalry. And as you said, it had the most emotions attached to it.
Yeah.
So in this year, I think these two, coming from being this great tag team, and I just always go back to this tweet that Goshi Ozaki made.
Oh, yeah.
Where he said, I needed it. It's just so emotional. Right after Katsuki Nakajima said that he really didn't need Go, Goshi Ozaki goes out there and says, I needed it. That's,
yeah, I needed you.
That's poetic. Yeah, I need you, right.
Yeah, and that was beautiful. Like, honestly, that was a really good pick by you and everybody else. You know, WH, you were saying some stuff earlier that I disagreed with. I think maybe you were spending too much time in the greatest wrestler ever Slack with some of these opinions. But now we're back on board right now, WH. I feel like you're on the right path again, and maybe I'm on the right path, and we're back together again. Like if Axis realigned, that's what I feel like now, because you made great picks. I totally agree with Tom and Julia. Good job, buddy.
Can I just say I've only been in that Slack like for five, ten minutes once, yeah. And then I just like, yeah. And there's a lot of voices in there. And I just like it gets a lot of noise. I actually been spending a lot of time on the post wrestling discourse talking about the Mandalorian more. So just so you know,
hey, shout out to the Mandalorian out there. How was Sasha Banks in that show? Did she do a good job?
She did a tornado DDT assisted by a rocket pack, so it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's much better than a WWE run.
That sounds wonderful on there. Although she did have a great match with Bayley earlier this year in the Hell in a Cell. So Sasha doing big things this year with the jetpack assisted DDT. We need to bring that spot to actual wrestling, I feel like, on there. But
I need to bring Mecha Mummy back into wrestling then. Yeah.
Right. We don't need that. Listen, I never said that. The WH, we were on the same side. Why are you doing this?
Doesn't Mecha Mummy have a jetpack? Or he could get one, couldn't he?
He could get one because maybe he's from the same factory as Strong Machine J.
I doubt that.
Okay, well, but before we completely go off the rails right now, I agree with your pick, bottom line, with Tom and Julia. I love that feud in ring. I think it really helped elevate Julia as well. I think the problem with things is, again, it's like the follow-up on all of these companies is so weak on some of their feuds. Because now Tom is doing this weird feud with Iwatani and this weird faction with Mina. It's been some questionable booking, in my opinion, with Tom Nakano. But at that point, when they were having their feud, I thought they were both really hot characters, doing great work in the ring. Their angles got a lot of people talking. An emotional response, even though a lot of people were kind of negative on that model angle or whatever they did. But still, I thought it got a lot of reaction, and the feud was so great in the ring. I thought they did such a great job. So I love that feud, and I would definitely have to put that up there. And I also agree with you, Striga, about the Takeshita and Friends versus Akiyama and Junretsu feud. I love their match so much that they had, and that feud will continue even after we do this show as well. So I think that does have something. Who knows? Maybe that'll have a flat finish too, and I'll change my mind at the end of it. But as of right now, I love that feud. Great things there. And I also agree about Ishida and Okuda. That would be my number two feud. I love that feud a lot. I think the in-ring has been strong. Like you said, maybe if you want to count it as part of the whole Red and Dragon Gate factions feud, that counts too. But I think all three of those picks that you guys made were great, and I agree with both of you.
I do think that the Akiyama and Takeshita match doesn't really get talked about enough because it was really that good.
Maybe it will get talked about later on.
Oh, maybe it will. All right. That was best rivalry. Shall we go on to most charismatic? Dylan, who do we have here?
No, I don't want to go on to that. Let's just skip this award.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
I thought about it long and hard.
Yeah. No. Okay, cool. Me up first. Okay. Number three for me, I went with someone I mentioned earlier, and not in any of the awards, but just in passing, because I have to go with someone who had a great turn at the beginning of the year. It feels like a zillion years ago now at this point. But and I would already put her as one of the most charismatic people anyway, but her turn in Ice Ribbon I thought was so well done, and she really is that the catalyst for the company, even though she's not champion anymore, but Mayu Yuki, to me, whether babyface or heel with this Rebel Enemy group, I think has done such a great job as champion, carried it forever, like carried the title forever, and really put over the new generation star in Suzu Suzuki. And everything she does in the ring, every moment that she has, like whether character work online, whether character work in the ring, she has it all to me. So she would be my number three pick.
That's a great pick here, because I think that the character is put so well together. You mentioned that when she's the baby face, she's the snow princess and is wearing white. And whenever she's a heel, she's these dark colors, even the dark hair. That's just so well thought out.
Amazing. She went from crystal snow to black snow. Yeah. There, and she'd already been doing this character too in OZ Academy, but her heel turn in Ice Ribbon kind of gave it a, like tweaked that a little bit to more of an Ice Ribbon centric version of her heel character. So I really liked that. I thought that was really complicated, because it would have been easy just to do the same thing that she was doing in OZ and bring it to Ice Ribbon, but instead she actually went with a whole new direction with this Rebel Enemy thing, and I thought it was really well done. So I think she's awesome and a great character, a very charismatic performer. Number two has to be the ace of the universe, Hiroshi Tanahashi. And here is my criteria for putting him in as number two. He's so charismatic that he can convince you to believe that he's done in the ring just by his acting. And then he will deliver a G1 just as I predicted. So that's my category, is that he will fool even the smartest of minds into thinking he's toast and he can't go anymore. But then when it's time to turn it on, the ace is back.
I never doubted that he can still turn it on. But I get your point, yeah.
Now he proved you and all of his doubters, you hated him and said it was time to retire all the time. I'm just kidding. He didn't go that far. But still, you did doubt him a little bit.
Yes.
And he came back, and with guns blazing, maybe I'll change my mind in 2 weeks after he faces Okan in the dome. Maybe I'll be the one fooled after that. But anyway, I think he's a tremendously charismatic worker. I don't think I'm breaking news to anybody right now. Somebody who does so many great things for the company, a wonderful representative, even though he's getting older and not pushed as much, I still think he's very charismatic in the ring. Number one to me, Hiromu Takahashi. To me, if you want evidence of this, just go back to the angle after Evil turned on Naito and won the titles. Hiromu stole the whole show from even Tetsuya Naito, when he had that a moment where he broke down in the ring and screamed at Evil.
Yeah.
And just an incredible charismatic performer, no matter who he's facing. Whether it's the Desperado feud, which I know you guys love so much, and a lot of people love so much. You know, and everything he does, he comes across so, and just an explosion of charisma, explosion of personality. He makes everything work regardless of his opponents. To me, he was my number one pick. And to me, this is actually one of the easiest awards, because he was the name that popped up right away for me.
That's interesting. Yeah, I got some other names, but I definitely can see yours, and Hiromu Takahashi definitely is deserving of those. I want to quickly go back, because you mentioned El Desperado, and WH, you mentioned the feud between Hiromu Takahashi and El Desperado as a rivalry, and I didn't really qualify it as such, because as you mentioned, they didn't really have a long-lasting rivalry this year. It was more in the second half of the year, so that's why I did not put it in, but I can see why you did. And how about your most charismatic?
My most charismatic, number three, is from New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's Minoru Suzuki. Even though, you know, a lot of people thought he's, you know, based on the kind of the tail end of 2019, like he's done, he's not getting pushed. And then he comes back in 2020 and during the pandemic, he just like kills it with his facial expressions and his persona. And I love his realism. Like there are times when sometimes Minoru Suzuki could be kind of goofy sometimes, but not this year. Everything he did, I thought was great. It was legit. It was serious. And I just loved everything he did this year. My number two is Julia from Stardom, because like, even though she's the white belt champion, like the secondary belt champion, I feel that belt, much like when Io Shirai held it, is the number one title in that company, is because she holds it and she carries herself as a star. And I feel she is the biggest star in that company. And I of course, like, you know, it helps that she's pushed that way by Bushiroad. But I think she rises to the occasion of her push. So like, and it's carried by her her, you know, her charisma is, you know, as a leader of Donna Del Mundo. But, you know, I agree with, you know, with Dylan, like the most charismatic person in all of wrestling, not just ProRes, but the whole world is Hiromu Takahashi. And you just, he's just beloved by people. I think mainly because he's such a crazy character that just draws people in with his charisma and his likability. I don't think this guy could ever be a heel. That's just my feeling. Like, I know he kind of started as one. I don't think he could ever go back to being a heel. No. So it would be really weird to see him in that role. But I think, you know, like, I think he's really propelled New Japan, you know, through this pandemic with, you know, his performances both on the mic and in the ring.
So I do think that Hiromu Takahashi is far and beyond uncatchable in his position as most charismatic wrestler in Japan. So I thought about who else is there except for Hiromu Takahashi. I have two honorable mentions, first of which is Katsuhiko Nakajima. Especially after his heel turn on Goshi Ozaki, I thought that the way he carried himself was incredible. And another honorable mention by me is Fuminori Abe, especially when he's doing weird, fun matches on the indies. Fuminori Abe is one of the most funny people in all of wrestling. So that's why I put him in here. On number three, I mentioned Tokiyoshi Pro's ace, Yuka Sakazaki. I think that overall, the TJP roster has this ability to draw you into their universe, into their shows. And no one personifies this better, in my opinion, than Yuka Sakazaki with her highly energetic approach to everything that she does. So I want to shout that out. On number two, a totally different character from Dragon Gate, from RED, RED leader Eita. I think that he is such a great character and is playing his role so well as the leader of this menacing evil unit. And also the way that he was able to to point out his heel character with wearing the glasses and just having this cool attitude, that I think that he deserves to be mentioned here. And then we always talk about him when we talk about his in-ring and that he's changed up so vastly different from what he was before. My most charismatic beneath the uncatchable Hiromu Takahashi is Kenta, especially when you look at the backstage skits that he did during the G1 Climax.
Yeah, I think all of those are good picks. Kenta was somebody I thought about in New Japan. He'd probably be my second pick besides Hiromu, so I think that's a good pick. I saw in a lot of our votes that we got from the people, a few people picked Nakajima. I think somebody picked Abe as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I love all of those picks as well. My honorable mention, I just want to say one thing too about WH's picks.
Yeah,
I think Julia is a really controversial choice because I actually agree with you, first of all, but I think some people will rail on her kind of unfairly. Like, you know, especially with her charisma, she's kind of stoic, but the way she carries herself is like a star. I think she has charisma in a different way than like someone like a Hiromu, who's like this explosion of colorful character work, energy. Julia's not really that, but she carries herself so well that she has that superstar charisma, kind of. So I think that was a controversial pick, but I agree with you, actually. I think that's a good one.
Well, she has poise, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Its own kind of charisma rather than, like, Hiromu Takahashi, you know, he has kind of a poise, but his main charismatic point is that he's nuts.
Yeah, or even like a Suzuki, that's a totally different thing, right? Like, even some of my picks, like Yuki, or like Katsuhiko Nakajima, they're all different kinds of charisma, and I think Julia, you have to consider up there as well. My only other honorable mention, because you kind of got me thinking with Abe, I also want to shout out El Lindemann.
Yes.
I think every time he's anywhere, pretty much, whether in 01, Big Japan, DDT, he is able to work any style, a super versatile performer, and I love his charisma that he has. I think he's a very, very, even more the T-Hawk, I think he's the more charismatic of the strong parts. Yeah.
How about Saki Klaus's choice of Risa Serra?
Love it. A great pick. Super charismatic performer as well, and a perfect person. Like, she, in a weird way, even more than maybe even Yuki, who they were formerly tag team partners. I think she represents Ice Ribbon almost like in the best way, because she has all the craziness. She was the first ever Fantastice champion as well, which is like basically for a gimmick for charismatic people, pretty much. It's not a serious wrestling title, but more you could have crazy matches and fun stuff. You know, so I love that pick, Risa Sera, as charismatic as they come, even though I slightly picked Yuki just because she was pushed more. But most years, I think I would kind of agree with you, actually, Saki Klaus, on that one, that Risa Sera is as charismatic as they come.
Yeah, I browsed through some of the picks. One more pick we got from Grism is Kazuchika Okada.
I don't think he had a great year.
No.
Nor is he. Like, I've never really thought he was that charismatic. Like, his most charismatic run, like, he's charismatic that he has these great moments and big matches that everyone loves, but I think his most charismatic was when Gato was talking for him more than anything.
Probably. It's kind of weird on the mic.
Yeah, he's a little awkward.
Okay, that's...
But hey, to be fair, though, remember when they had the Golden Lovers reunion and he sat there with that stunned look on his face?
He's charismatic in his own unique way.
Yeah. That was his best moment, I think. You know, that I would say if he brought that out more, I might agree with that pick. He needs to bring it out more. I think he should be on commentary whenever there's like a huge moment, and he should make that look every time. And they should make sure to cut to him.
I think his most charismatic moment ever was when he cried when he lost to Hiroshi Tanahashi once again.
Oh yeah, that was a much more serious moment than the other one. But still, I completely agree with you. He totally made that whole thing work. That was a great, great moment.
Going to best promotion, I'm going to start here. Number three for me is Pro Wrestling Noah. I think they've had a great, great year, especially with the heavyweights. And here is where I make the cut, because I think that you can divide the promotion into two. And we've been over this a lot in recent weeks and months. When you look at the heavyweight scene, they've had a great development, especially with Goshi Ozaki as champion, with the turn of Katsuyuki Nakajima, the establishment of the national title as a viable number two championship, Kenno, Takashi Sugiura, all these guys. But then there are the juniors. The juniors are just a minefield, and every other week there is a turn, there is another one debuting, there is another X. And so that kind of dragged it down for me to put Pro Wrestling Noah higher up on my list. Still,
it's been a minefield, and I feel like I've been walking through with clown shoes these past couple of months, because I'm the one who's gotten blown up more than anyone else.
I love it. Yeah, dude. But still, though, if you consider where they came from, Pro Wrestling Noah at the end of 2020 has had a great year. Number two, in my opinion, is Dragon Gate. They had a great year too, not to the heights of other promotions, for example, Pro Wrestling Noah, but Dragon Gate has been much more consistent in their booking, unlike Pro Wrestling Noah, and they are the promotion in Japan that pushes the young wrestlers, the rookies, the best, in my opinion. And they've also gotten away from their habit of pissing away big matches because of all these interferences that they do. They still happen, but in a more condensed way than before. And their big shows now in this year have been much more watchable than those shows in recent years. Especially the main event matches have not been these 40-minute, high-octane, super indie matches that they've been before when Shima was around. It's a promotion that really focuses on telling a great story and putting over new talent, and that I think has to be valued. My number one promotion, though, is Dramatic Dream Team. Especially during the pandemic, they've created such a great escapism through their DDT TV shows that they did, which culminated in the great Yoshihiko versus Konosuke Takeshita match that you mentioned, Dylan. And even afterwards, they've created great, great shows, great moments in Ultimate Party, in the Road to Ultimate Party with Eruption winning the tag title, and the D-King Grand Prix that's still going on also is very good. They had the King of DDT tournament. So overall, I think what has happened in DDT this year has led to them being my number one company. WH, what about you?
I think mine kind of mirrors yours. Like, number three is Pro Wrestling Noah for the exact same reasons. I think they've had a really great main event scene, but the kind of some parts of the undercard, especially the tag team titles, the heavyweight tag titles, booked terribly. Like, and just the installation of like Nosawa's friends into the company. I'm not a big fan of it. I like, you know, some of these guys are talented, but like, I never want to see, you know, Fujita, or I could do without Sakuraba, even though I've enjoyed some of his work. I don't think this company needs a bunch of like guys in their 40s in the main event scene. I think it has to go towards its younger guys. Like you talked about Daiki Naba. This guy should be getting a bigger push. Kiyomiya shouldn't be losing to Muto. I don't know if that's setting up something. It might be like down the line, but you know, with how the heavyweight title is going to be booked. But for me, the thing that kills Noah is its juniors. It's terrible. It is worse than New Japan's main event title scene, which is horrible. And that's why it's not even a runner up in for me. It's like the whole evil push and like, you know, the way people like, how like all the heels are the same in that company, like Jay White and Evil are the exact same and they're pushed down our throats. It just kills New Japan for me in many ways. Even though they're gonna do well in my match of the year, you know, valid. But I know it's like if their juniors were a lot more consistent, I'd probably place them higher. But number two is Dragon Gate. Even though I admittedly don't watch a lot of Dragon Gate, I do know it's very consistent company, and you know, like just some certain things that I'm not a fan of, like you're saying, the interference and the, you know, like the heels. Like the heels are really kind of goofy in my opinion, like RED. Like, you know, I think the last great heel faction in Dragon Gate was Berserk, and I think everything else since then has kind of been kind of weak, which has basically been RED. I'm not a huge fan of that faction, so that's why it's only number two. My number one promotion, I think, is the most well-booked and consistently booked promotion from the top of the card to the bottom of the card, is Stardom. And I think they've made great strides over the last year, especially with the blow of losing Hana Kimura and having to deal with the pandemic. They have bounced back. And, you know, with their recent announcement that they're going to run Budokan Hall, that I think that's just, you know, kind of adds, you know, kind of prestige to them. And hopefully that show does really well. But I feel like, you know, just consistently throughout the year, like they've had some really great moments and have been a very, very consistent product, even this like crazy 2020 that we've had.
Yeah, great choice there too. Stardom was also mentioned by Saki Klaus, and I think Grism also mentioned Stardom. No, he mentioned TJP. TJP also got 2 votes from our listeners. Dragon Gate got 4 votes, so our listeners very much in line with our choices here. Dylan, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. Number three pick, I had Noah at three as well, for the exact same reasons. I disagree with the tag titles. I think Sakuraba and Sugira have done a great job with that team, and I think Sakuraba is a deserving push, not just because of his age, but because he has so many fresh matches. Even though he's old, he's not one of these guys that's been hanging on forever. He has a lot of fresh matches, and his work is very interesting, unique style. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with everybody. We saw that in the singles match with Keno. But I really like that. The juniors, unfortunately, I mean, I just want to set the record straight on this, because somebody messaged me the other day and was saying, I'm just like Dylan now, I hate the juniors and Noah. I like the talent of the juniors. Like, I like the workers. It's the booking that makes me hate them so much. I mean, we just saw it, like, just last night. They had a match with Harada and Tadasuke, which everybody loved and thought was a great match. And unfortunately, it's just the booking that we've got there is so stupid. That, and it's not just that. When you compare it to the New Japan heavyweight guys, you at least get the feeling, like I said, there's almost a method to Gato's madness at times with the evil push. Clearly it was unpopular to many people, but they at least had advertising type of deals with that. You had a huge gimmick with him, a huge turn that got people talking, and it was something different than just going to Okada over again, which was appreciated in that sense. With the Noah Juniors, it feels like this is Nosawa making a joke out of the division, which I really, really dislike. So, unfortunately, I wanted to give them a promotion of the year, and I think it's wonderful that they're going to go to the Budokan. I think that shows something, that's a justification for a lot of things. unfortunately, the booking, even to that, I don't really like that much. So I think that's really a problem. But in this year, as crazy as it was, I think the pandemic is going to get overblamed for some things, when in reality, it's just a lot of bad booking throughout, not just NOAH, but pretty much all the companies, you know, it feels like, or a lot of them at least. So that's really where I was looking for, was who was the best booked companies, sort of like WH was saying. And I went with Ice Ribbon as my number two. I think everybody should have a Joshi promotion in their top three. I think Stardom had a really tough time. I got to say, I really haven't enjoyed them that much compared to last year. I mean, I like the Tom Nakano-Julia feud, and I love a lot of what they're doing, but you're losing Hana. That was devastating. Losing Hoshiki was devastating to me personally. And also, just her work rate was so missed this year, I feel like. They tried to push new people. The Jumbo push, I wasn't as on board with as WH with her performance in the five-star. Although she got pushed a lot and wrestled a lot, I think there were others that I thought maybe outperformed her. You have Bea Priestley coming back. It was just, it's an up and down year for Stardom, in my opinion. Tokyo Joshi Pro, same deal. Like, there's a lot of things that are good about them, but then some things that I'm not as in love with. So to me, it just depends on your preference, really, between those three companies. You know, some people pick Stardom, some people pick Tokyo Joshi Pro, and I think both of those are legitimate. But for me, I like the Ice Ribbon company better. They built up to a legitimate new star in Suzu. I think Maya Yuki is a wonderful ace of the company that she was doing, and she used her run wonderfully. The tag team stuff with the drop kickers was great, I thought, throughout the year. They have a unique style to them. Even during the pandemic, I thought adopting, like, changing their style to completely comedy really made them much more palatable during that time. You even had, listen, we talked about the Mandalorian earlier, but Baby Yoda was in a match in Ice Ribbon.
Yes.
And they defeated the coronavirus, Risa Sarah and Fujimoto, in a tag team match. So if you have a promotion that defeats coronavirus, you have to be in the top three. That's just my opinion. Maybe others disagree with it. Yeah.
Maybe we can give that to best moment, because, yes, yeah, they defeated the coronavirus, but did it last?
And Baby Yoda as well. the two evils of this world this year, Ice Ribbon honed in on them, apparently.
Yeah, I really like the Ice Ribbon pick. I, of all the Yoshi companies I watched this year, I enjoyed Ice Ribbon and TJP the most. I also like to watch Actress Girls. I always make time for watching their shows. I think that's a good company too. WH, you mentioned Himeka, of course, originally from Actress Girls. I really think that she's good too. So there have been good things going on in the Yoshi scene, definitely.
Yeah, number one, I went with Dragon Gate for all the reasons you said. I think this is if you count from January 1st to now, at the end of the year, they were the company that had the most improvement, especially in terms of audience interaction in the West. I think there's so many more people talking about it now than they were a year ago. Mm. And even then, last year, they had a good year. I thought that was kind of like their rebuilding year. That was the year I kind of started taking note of them a little bit more, because they had so many different styles. Kai came in last year. You had Ultimo Dragon coming back. Some really cool stuff going on there. But this year, it feels like they're finally realizing their potential, or they finally realized their potential. Even though, that, like I said, I don't love everything about them. WH made some points I agree with. But I think overall, in this year and the way things have been booked everywhere, I would take them over NOAH and the other. To me, New Japan and All Japan wouldn't even be sniffing.
No,
my list, unfortunately.
As far as that goes, we definitely agree.
Yeah.
Now, slowly but surely, we're getting to the meat of the show with the next category. We have Show of the Year. WH, what do you have?
What I have, okay, so I was kind of going back and forth with this recently, like when I was making this ballot. So Show of the Year, number three, comes from Stardom. It's from July 24th. It's the Stardom Cinderella Summer in Nagoya, headlined by Mayu Iwatani taking on Jungle Kiona. Great match. And also one of my favorite multi-person matches, Dena Del Mundo, Time Limit Draw versus Queen's Quest. Absolutely love that match. And I thought the rest of the undercard was a really, really solid. Number two is also from Stardom. The Goddess of Stardom Tag League day four show from Cork and Hall on August 18th. It has three great matches. They're rated very highly on Cage Match here. The eight-man tag team match, or eight-woman tag team match, Donna Del Mundo versus Oedo Tai. Queen's Quest taking on Queen's Quest for the Goddesses of Stardom Tag League match. And then the main event, the World of Stardom title match, Mayu Iwatani taking on Takumi Uraha. Just absolutely killer match. But my number one card show of the year, even though the promotion itself is not rated highly by me, I thought this show was really great for different reasons. I thought it was most consistently, it was consistently good throughout the entirety of its run. And that was from the G1 Climax. It's day 13 from October 10th from Edeon Arena in Osaka, headlined by Kazuchika Okada taking on Shingo Takagi, but also had Ibushi versus Minoru Suzuki, another great match. Osprey versus Tai Chi, which was okay. I didn't think it was a great match. But most importantly, guys, it had a sub-4-minute Jay White, Yujiro Takahashi match, and you can't fucking beat that.
And that was a great angle, too. It was really more of an angle than a match, but it was great, though. It totally.
But it wasn't more than 4 minutes. It was less than 4 minutes. I didn't have to watch Jay White or Yujiro Takahashi for less than 4 minutes. It's fantastic.
Exactly. It was great. Just like I said. I love those picks, actually. I think that those were so great. And I love that you went into the weeds of the tournaments to pick them. I thought that was really good. And that Stardom show you mentioned was just completely awesome. I remembered that right away. Like, you know a show's good if in the middle of the tournament, you know exactly which one. The New Japan one, I didn't remember it right away, to be honest, until you started talking about it. But the Stardom one, I totally did. The Iwatani and Aroha match was just incredible. That eight-woman tag was just awesome. Like, way underrated match of the year. I love that show, and I love your picks, Deborah. She did a great job.
That New Japan show is the highest rated of the year with a 9.31 at Cage Match. It also had the best Jeff Cobb match of the tournament against, of course, Tomohiro Ishii. No surprise there, but I also loved the Jay White versus Yujiro Takahashi angle. It also had this meme match between Ibushi and Suzuki that you, Dylan, that you talked about on your Patreon shows.
Yeah, great match.
With Robert and Kazuchika Okada and Shingo Takagi, great match too. Yeah, I can see that, WH.
That was one of the best matches of the tournament, though, Okada Shingo match.
Right.
I thought.
Right. So, Dylan, what about your top shows?
Okay, my top shows here, I went 3 for 3 in Joshi with my shows.
Wow.
First of all, I picked Seedlings Close to You show from July 13th. And this match featured a great match with Arisa Nakajima versus Yoshiko. One of the best of the year, I feel like a lot of Joshi people would agree with. That's when Yoshiko actually won the title. You had a great six-woman tag with Max Voltage versus Hiroyu Matsumoto, Rina Yamashita, and you. Not you, but you.
You.
There. Yes, exactly. So there was a great high-speed three-way match, too, with Ayame Sasamura, Kaho Kobayashi, and Tsukushi Haruka in a great match. So up and down that show, it was like all enjoyable matches. I really enjoyed that. So that's what I look for in a lot of the shows of the year, is what I think is up and down the card enjoyable. And I think WH picked great picks with his, and that's kind of what I was thinking with mine as well. Number two would be from Ice Ribbon as well. And that would be Ice Ribbon's new Ice Ribbon number 1057. And I know that we've talked about all 1056 beforehand. But this was the final Yokohama Bunka show for Ice Ribbon, if you want to get more specific about it. Although I like my way as well.
I actually personally knew what you were talking about because I looked up that show too.
Yes, so see, that's what I'm saying. You know it's a good show when you know it, even. And like, listen, this isn't just a tournament. This is thousands of shows, and you recognize it right away. So to me, it has to be the show of the year at this point. But it actually had an interesting match. It had the Fantastic title match with Risa Sera versus Rina Yamashita, which was an incredible match, again, to shout them out. You had Suzu Suzuki winning the title over Maya. You had Hiragi Kurumi and Mochi Miyagi defeating the Dropkickers for the tag titles. Three title changes to end the show, all of them great matches. You even had the IW 19 title back after they brought that back with Hamako Hoshi defending that. Triangle Ribbon, you had Chon Shiryu somehow appearing on Ice Ribbon all in 2020. Shun Shiryu in a match and a great 8-person elimination tag at the start. You had Ibuki Hoshi, Maiko Ozaki, Riko Kaiju, Thekla. They defeated the team of Benny Oikawa, Satsuki Totoro, Yappy, and Yuki Mashiro. Really underrated elimination match there. Up and down the show, it was great, and I thought it was an awesome show.
Great picks there. I have the
Ice Ribbon. I even have a third one, too, on my list as well.
I was just going to say I have the Ice Ribbon one in my honorable mentions, too.
Awesome. Like, see, yeah. Everybody loved, everybody was happy with pro wrestling that day. But I had to, number one to me wasn't just about show quality, but more so overall impact. And that was the first Assemble show of the year for me. Not necessarily the best matches, even though I thought Up and Down, pretty much every match was enjoyable. But it was more so the idea of it being such a huge show for the scene, because that's something nobody would have predicted, you know, a year in the past. And even, like, to be honest with you, it's kind of a crazy time in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of everything going on. To see something like that happen, I just think was incredible. And it was a great show up and down. You had a match from all kinds of different Joshi companies. You had a freelance match with Asuka, Saki Akai, Yumiko Hota, Sari, Tomoko Inaba, and Riko Kawahata. You had the OZ Academy match with Mayumi Ozaki and Sari Ano versus Mission K4, Sonoko Kato, and Akino. You had the Sendai Girls match with Chihiro Hashimoto, Manami, and Natsuo Kaneko versus Dash Chisako, Meiko Satomura, and Yurika Oka. We won't see that match anymore with Meiko in the UK now. You have the Seedling match with Honori Hana, Yoshiko. They defeated the team of Arisa Nakajima and Riku Kaiju, which I thought was probably the best match on the show, if not the main event. You had Pure J getting represented here. I love that. Unfortunately, Manami Katsu is gone now in Pure J, but she teamed with Mari Manji. They took on Leon and Raiden Hagane. That was a decent little match. Then the main event was Marvelous, of all people, with Mei Hoshizuki, Mikoto Shindo, and Mio Momono versus Maria and Neutra, Rin Kodokura, and Takumi Aroha. And what a big moment for the young girls of Marvelous to actually get a win in a big show. I thought it was a really special show to have this happen, and can only lead to bigger things in the future with stuff like Big Egg Universe getting talked about, being brought back. I think it's the first step to a great future of Joshi Pro Wrestling, and I think this is the start of it.
Great choices there. At least this one choice in the end, the Assemble one I didn't see coming, but great that we talked about it. For my top three, I have a couple of different shows. Late contender for show of the year is my number three, Dragon Gate's Final Gate show from December 20, that I just watched earlier this morning as we were recording this show. I mentioned the great unit disband match between RED and the Toriumon generation that resulted in Toriumon having to disband and in them being completely devastated. That match got my emotions running. They had a lot of callbacks to prior units and to prior unit disband matches. It definitely was the craziest one since the Berserk versus Jimmy's match that also had a lot of emotions attached to it. You also had a very good Open the Dreamgate title match between Shun Skywalker and Benkei, a fun Twingate title match, even though it was pretty short, Kai and BB Hulk against Don Fuji and Masaki Mochizuki. Another very, very good defense of Keisuke Okuda against Kagetora, and a very, very solid undercard. So that's my number three pick. My number two pick is Pro Wrestling NOAH's 20th anniversary, NOAH The Chronicle from November 22. The show in the undercard didn't really have anything to offer, but the heights that the show had convinced me that this deserved to be up there with the Goshi Ozaki and Nakajima and with Kenno and Kaito Kiyomiya in great, great matches. And the tag title match was good as well. So that's my number two. And for my number one pick, I go back to March of this year to Big Japan, the Ikitosen Strong Climb, day three, March 21st, with five incredible matches: Akira Yodo versus Hiroshi Kawakami, Isami Kodaka against Taishi Takisawa, Yuya Aoki versus Yasufumi Nakanoe, Ryota Hama against Yuji Kobayashi, and Daichi Hashimoto against T-Hawk.
Again, just like with WH, I love that you went into the tournament situation and picked a show out in the middle of the tournament. But all great matches there. You know, I really enjoyed that show as well. So I think that's a great pick.
Yeah, so that was a show of the year, I think. any other honorable mentions from your side?
Nothing for me.
Yeah, to me, the I can't wait to watch the Final Gate show.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be up there with me from the sounds of it. I really can't wait to watch it. I think the first Noah show of the year, with Go winning the title over Kaito, the one where they had all the mystery guys,
mm-hmm.
I thought was fun to watch and interesting. But not necessarily one I picked, but I thought that was an interesting show.
What's the January 4 show, right?
Yeah,
that's what's mentioned by Yankin M.
Yeah, see, so that was an interesting show. Very worthy a pick.
Pinsente mentions as show of the year DDT Ultimate Party. Saki Klaus mentions Yokohama Cinderella by Stardom. Klabauta has TJP's Wrestle Princess. KSJ as show of the year, let me see, Kobe World, right? Grism, show of the year, also TJP, Wrestle Princess. Dominic, also, just like WH, mentions the Night 13 of the G1 Climax. And then Final Gate 2010, also mentioned by Puro Reviews. So all good choices here. All right, Dylan, do you want to continue with Best Bout?
Why not? Let's go to it. Best Bout. So to me, there were so many. Every year, and even this year, because everybody kind of says at the end of it, like, oh, this year wasn't that good in pro wrestling. But the reality is there were so many freaking great matches this year to go to that you could pick. And so many things that I loved in wrestling, in all honesty. So number three to me was El Desperado versus Hiromu Takahashi in the Best of Super Junior Final. We already talked about the mask getting taken off spot, and that's where I think that's really where the match, that point on, was where it made its bones as a match of the year candidate. The first part of the match was looking pretty solid. It wasn't anything special to me, and I was pretty down on the tournament overall. But then once they got to that point, things got elevated so much that I truly loved that match. I thought it was a lot better than even, and they have some highly regarded matches, some decent matches before, some really loved ones, but to me, I think this elevated itself above all of their previous versions with this Budokan main event. The stakes of it all felt good. It's going to hurt for me to know that it really didn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things for Desperado. But for at least a singular moment of this, not just the mask wrestling, but the match itself, being that one special thing for him to get the main event was a big deal in his career anyway. So I think it was a great thing. You know, and a great match. Like, the work was incredible. Hiromu was one of the best in the world. And Desperado showed that if you put him, you know, give him these chances, he really delivered here. So I had to put that in my top three. You know, to me, the New Japan match of the year, in fact. Number two for me was the match you mentioned earlier that nobody talked about enough. And I'm going to talk about it here. Jun Akiyama versus Konosuke Takeshita from DDT Ultimate Party. I think to me, this was like, this is a match that every wrestler should watch, especially if either you're a veteran or B, because Takeshita shows yet again how good he is at wrestling different opponents and different styles and able to carry himself as the ace in different situations. Here against somebody like Akiyama, I thought it was a masterclass throughout. There was literally no flaws in this match, really, to me. I thought they both played their roles so well. Really underrated match in hindsight. I agree with your point earlier, because that's something that kind of happened, and I think a lot of people liked it. Mm-hmm. And then it's just we moved right on to the Noah matches that happened afterwards.
Right. I'm so glad that we talked about it in length on this show, because that displayed to me how great this match really was.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that go back and listen to that episode. That was a really good episode of the show we did when we talked about that. And that, to me, Ultimate Party, the show, we can talk about DDT all you want, about their 12-hour shows and a lot of it bullcrap comedy that I don't like. But when you have a match like that, it makes it all worthwhile at the end of the day. Because to me, like, that totally stole the show on that whole match. And I think a lot of people, even on Cage Match, it's not rated as much as the main event on that show, Endo and Sasaki. But to me, I thought it was just like way, like on a completely different level than any other of their matches on the show for me. Great match, in my opinion. Just everything I wanted out of wrestling, they brought it at the end of the day. So I really hope everybody checks that out. Maybe you have let that slip under the radar, or maybe you just weren't in the right mindset or something. Whatever the reason, give that match a second chance if you didn't like it that much, because I think it was an incredible performance by both men. And the number one match to me was the match we just talked about last week, Go Shiozaki and Takashi Sugiura. As I mentioned, amazing story compared to their first match, all the stuff they brought in from 2009, and Sugiura tried to, actually not just trying, he successfully ended his first reign, and bringing that back to here, ending his big title reign here, or trying to end his big title reign, and they brought great stuff from there. You had, obviously, you know, these guys are going to hit each other very hard. Everybody knew that coming in. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But they had so much more to it if you look at the other match. And like you said, you just told me last week you were in awe just watching this match as it was just them wrestling. And I think a lot of people were. So to me, that was my match of the year. I thought it was better than the Nakajima match, personally. And that was a great match, too. But I thought this was the match of the year for me. Great late contenders here. But all three of those matches at the beginning of November to the beginning of December. So all three late picks here, maybe recency bias in effect on my part, but I thought all three of those were great matches, and they were my picks.
I may also have this recency bias, but I will also shout out some matches from the first half in my honorable mentions. I have number two and three in different order. I have Konosuke Takeshita versus Jun Akiyama on number three and Hiromu Takahashi versus El Desperado on number two. You already mentioned the reasons for each pick very well, Dylan. Then the listeners to our last show were able to hear that I was in awe of the Shiozaki versus Sugiura match, but I couldn't really pinpoint it to why that was. But you could, because you had the backstory, Dylan. And that's why I guess you enjoyed this match so much. I also loved it, but I haven't gone back to check out the match 10 years ago and rewatch it. So it also appears in my top five, but Shiozaki versus Sugiura is my number four match. And my number one pick is Go Shiozaki versus Katsuhiko Nakajima. This match clicked for me, A, on the level of the intensity of the work inside the ring, and then also from the emotional aspect of it. And I think for me, there is no other match that really comes close to it, except for maybe one match, and I have not put it into my top three because there may also be a bias, and that may be the emotional bias from earlier today, the RED versus Toriumon unit disband match. It's really unfortunate.
Such thing as bias. You can put it in the top three if you want.
It's really unfortunate that we do that show today because I'm not sure about that match yet. I may have to rewatch it too. But it's also mentioned by the user at Puro Reviews as the match of the year. I really thought it was a great one. But my number three, my first three definitely stand with Takeshita Akiyama, Desperado, Takahashi, and Nakajima Shiozaki.
I want to see that match from Final Gate 2. Because a lot of people have big thoughts on it. You're saying it as well. Yeah. So I'm gonna leave, like you, I haven't even seen it yet, but I'm leaving room for interpretation. I might change my mind on the next episode. Mm-hmm. And we might come back and be like, look, the Final Gate match was in there. But right. Like I said, I think the only thing with Nakajima, I agree with you about the emotional standpoint. Again, it really wasn't their fault at all, and I feel a little bad underselling it because it really was just because they cut it off before the finish that really just ruined everything for me. And I love that match. We talked about it on there, but I just think that the emotional impact of it kind of got flattened for that. But
that's true.
You know, that was a great match, and a lot of people really loved both of those matches. We had picked for both of those, Sugiura and Nakajima in the match of the year. So two matches that everyone loved, pretty much.
That is right. WH, how about you?
So I'm going to go back to, for number three, I'm going to go back to February of this year, February 2nd, New Beginning in Sapporo, day two, Zack Sabre Jr. defending his IWGP British Heavyweight title against Will Ospreay. You laugh, but it's true. It's the IWGP British Heavyweight title. I thought that match was just absolutely brilliant. I think, you know, just probably Zack's best match of the year. Number two, more recent, it's Hiromu Takahashi defeating El Desperado in the Best of the Super Junior Finals from December 11th. And my number one match of the year, this is just a match that just has stuck with me since I saw it. It is from, let me just get the date here. It's from April 6th. It's from All Japan's What We Can Do Now show. Mm-hmm. It's Jake Lee, Shuji Ishikawa, and Yuma Aoyagi taking on Kento Miyahara, Suwama, and Zeus. And the reason I picked this is that this match just resonates me. I think a lot because, like, I've been watching so much old school All Japan, and it reminds me of those great six-mans between, like, Tsurugan versus... Super Generation Army. This match reminded me of that because... It went an hour, but it didn't feel like an hour. It just flew by. And I know this is going to be like really sacrilege for some people, but I thought the Sugiura Go match felt like it was an almost an hour match. And like I didn't enjoy it as much as a lot of other people do. And I'm kind of an outlier on that match. I know that for a fact. But this match, this six man was just like everything I want out of professional wrestling. And it's what I want out of All Japan. And it's what I want, how I want main eventers to be used in a company. Not everything has to be a singles match. Not everything has to be for the Triple Crown or for any kind of heavyweight title. It can just be a match that's there, and it had meaning. There was like some deep meaning and storytelling points in like all the interactions between everyone on each side, even among, like, with Miyahara, like Suwama and Zeus, like the way they treated him. They worked together with him, but like they obviously did not like teaming with him in the match. So, and it showed, and it came out, and I thought these are all storyline points that would pay off later on. And I just, I've thought about this match all year, and I'm just like, yeah, this is probably my favorite match of the year. So here it is, number one.
I do have it in my honorable mentions. At that time, this match I thought was amazing, especially because they managed the time so well that I was laying on my couch and just watching the action going on and completely forgetting time over it, and that shows how great it was. I want to give a shout out to some other matches. Zeus versus Kento Miyahara was for a long time my front runner for the match of the year. Then Naito versus Okada from the Tokyo Dome, January 5. I recently rewatched it, and it really was a great match. Also, Yoshifumi Nakanoe against Yuya Aoki. I think this was the coming out party for Yuya Aoki. March 21st for my favorite show of the year in the Strong Climb. An incredible, incredible hard-fought match between these two wrestlers.
Yeah, I actually had the six-man for All Japan on my list too. That was an incredible match, and I completely agree with what you said about it reminding you of the old-school Tsurugan and Super Generation Army matches. That's what stood out to me when I watched it. And it also has the meaning of that being the show right when the no fan shows was beginning. Mm-hmm. And that showed you that, like, hey, there might not be any fans, but we can still have great wrestling here pretty much. So I thought that had a special meaning to it as well. Another match that I really enjoyed was Hagane Shino versus Keisuke Ishii.
Oh, yeah.
Gambari Pro Show for the Independent Junior Heavyweight title. Probably the most noteworthy match of that whole title's existence in like a million years. It feels like since the indies were like bigger, pretty much.
Since Kota Bushi was champion, probably.
Yeah, exactly. They even mentioned that in the promo, pretty much. And, Asuka ended up winning the title a month later. That's a good thing. The Gambari Pro is where it is, but I thought for that month it had a little bit of a resurgence, if you would want to even call it that. The title did, anyway, and I thought that was an incredible match. Great story to it. I thought it was just awesome. The other match I would have would be that match. I mentioned the Fujimoto versus Suzu Suzuki match in March. I thought it was a great, great match. One of the better Joshi matches of the year. Tom Nakano and Julia was an incredible match. In the five-star Grand Prix, I thought it was even better than their other match. And even the Jungle Kiona and Mayu Iwatani match, I thought was an incredible match. I wish that Jungle had won. That might have put it over the top for me. But just as an actual wrestling match, I thought that was right up there. Even with the Aroha matches, which everyone goes to, I thought it was just a great year of wrestling in general. There were so many great matches throughout. Even in even in All Japan and New Japan, they've had down years or whatever. But you could point to all kinds of matches from them. You have the Zeus and Miyahara Champion Carnival Final, which was great. You had the Susumu and Hikaru Sato match in January. Like, that was right at the start of the year, and I thought that was an incredible match. New Japan, you mentioned the Naito match. I wasn't as a big a fan of that, but a lot of people loved it. It won the Tokyo Sports Award on there, too. Ibushi and Okada, I thought was a great match from the Tokyo Dome. Ibushi and Taichi, I thought was an interesting match in the G1. So you had all kinds of great matches, you know, just that I'm remembering, even from kind of down promotions. The Dragon Gate match had a few. Nautilus and Stronghearts and DDT, I thought was a great tag team match, like another super underrated match earlier on in the year. Taku Okada versus Okabayashi in February, I thought was a really incredible match for the youngster. So all kinds of promotions, all kinds of great matches all over the world. Just there really is no wrong answer for this, I feel like, because there's so many great matches.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go to some of the listeners' choices here. Matthias, the user at Yankin M, mentions Kaito versus Go Shiozaki from January 4. Pinsente as best bout Shiozaki Kenno, the 60-minute match. Interesting choice there, too. That was a great match. Saki Klaus has Mayu Iwatani versus Takumi Iroha, the second one.
I thought the second one was better than the first one as well. So good pick there, Saki Klaus.
Yes. Klabota has Okada versus Ibushi, Wrestle Kingdom Night 1. KSJ, Katsuki Nakajima versus Go Shiozaki. Grism, also Shiozaki versus Nakajima. Dominic, Sugiura versus Shiozaki, so much like you, Dylan. And as I already mentioned, per reviews, the unit disband match. So a lot of great choices there for the best bout. Mm-hmm. So now we are getting into the direction of the singular awards. Well, not the singular awards, but the awards for the best combinations and the best performers. So we're starting with the best tag team, WH. Who do you have as the best tag team?
Okay, for number three comes from 2AW, and that's the team of Chango and Taichi Tomato. Just what an accomplishment these two had of like having just consistently like great matches in their title win, and then the defenses that they had. They kind of broke up right after they lost titles, but in that title reign, my God, they were just bringing attention to their promotion during the no crowd era of wrestling, and I was just captivated by their entitled title run. So they're number three. Number two is the Donna Del Mundo trio of Micah, Shuri Kondo, and Julia. I thought they had an awesome run with the Artists of Stardom titles and just some great defenses from them and just amazing chemistry with those three, especially. The whole unit, I think, is really good, but those three in particular have this great, 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 great chemistry that I love, 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 love. So, but my number one tag team comes from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's the team of Takuya Nomura and Fuminori Abe, the Astronauts. I've always loved this team, but, you know, they finally won the tag team titles this year in a great match against Sakamoto and Kohei Sato, and just one of the most consistent teams out there in all of wrestling, whether it's in Japan or Europe or North America. I love all their matches. Like, I don't think they hit, like, anything higher than a 4-star rating, but usually they're pretty consistent with that high rating with me. So like they got to be up there. And I'm just hoping that, you know, 2021 sees a continuation of their tag team title reign.
Yeah, I actually have the Astronauts on number 2 of my list. I thought they had a great year. And as you said, there are fans that really thought that the match where they won the tag title was kind of match of the year level. I didn't think it was as high, but still, though, they have a great run as tag team champions, and that still continues on. The reason that I didn't choose Kaji Tomato and Chango in my top three was the reason that you mentioned. They broke up right away after they lost the tag team titles, and their run was kind of only in the first half of 2020. And they are opposing units right now, so that kind of devalued it for me, at least. I have on number three a tag team from Freedoms, and I'm once again going back to Violento Jack, the longtime reigning King of Freedom tag team champions, Violento Jack and Mammoth Sasaki. I already gave him a shout out in our half-year awards, where I called their way of wrestling very reckless, you could say, with their opponents, not reckless in the way of being unsafe, but just being two mean brawlers that go out there to destroy their competition. They recently had a match against Tatsuya Takaiwa and Gentaro, which I really, really liked a lot too. So this tag team gets a shout out from me. Then, as I mentioned, the Astronauts on number two. And my favorite tag team on top of the list is Nautilus, Yuki Ueno, and Naomi Yoshimura. I thought they had a great run, both as DDT, KOD Tag Team Champions, and they also had this match against Eruption for the six-man tag team titles that culminated in the Road to Ultimate Party, where they first had the six-man tag team title match, and then they had the tag team title match. That I thought was a great culmination of that tag team run that ended there. It almost lasted 300 days, so from January 3, 2020 until October 25, Ueno and Yoshimura, my top tag team.
I agree with everything you said. They were my number three team. I thought they were totally awesome this year. To me, easily the highlights of DDT, along with Takeshita as well. Obviously, you have to give Run for his props. But to me, those guys did such a great job as a team. They had breakout performances all over the place as the tag team champions, obviously. They wrestled a lot of different talents, too. The being in DDT does let them have that kind of autonomy, where they could wrestle a lot of different people, whether it's the Strong Hearts. They even had a match with Chihiro Hashimoto at one point, and Yuki Ino earlier on in the year. You know, Dan Shoko Dino and Super Sasadango Machine, you know, the Damnation team. They started at the when they won the titles. They won the titles at like literally the start of the year, like it was like January 3rd or something. They had a match versus, I'm looking up right now, it was Sasaki and Soma Takao, and they won the titles from them. All kinds of different people they were facing. Obviously, the Strong Hearts match was my favorite of theirs, but you had other Damnation teams, Shimatani and Endo. So just all kinds of matches, all kinds of trios matches, 8-man tags as well. Just an incredibly well-rounded year. So love Nautilus as a tag team. Hope they get back together someday and do some good work in the tag division. Number two team for me was Astronauts, which, I mean, you guys have said everything that needs to be said already. I love them as a team. I always have. And I think this year, I was so happy to see them get the tag titles. It was so well-deserved. This was the first year where they actually got pushed to anywhere near where they should have been. I thought that they'd done a great job with the titles. Obviously, again, they're another team that has wrestled a lot of different people. I'm looking at their title reign right now. They won the titles for Sakamoto and Sato. They defended them against Okami, Hashimoto, and Kamatani. They had another defense versus the Strong Hearts, which was also a great match. And then the Brahmin Brothers as well, even in a tag team match.
That one was purely for me.
Yes, exactly. And today, as we speak, they had a match earlier against Sato and Ishikawa, the Twin Towers. So can't wait to watch that as well. And they're just an amazing team. Again, they've had some other non-title matches that are worth checking out as well. They
title against Drew Parker and Chris Brooks at the end of the year.
Yep. See, so they've still got a little bit left to go in the year. We've got that match with Twin Towers and Brooks and Parker. We'll see what they can do there. They're a team too. Earlier on, especially when there were crowds, because Abe's and Basara, they could wrestle there too. Pretty much, they had a little bit there. J Stage, they were on a few bit. Like Abe just wrestles everywhere in existence. So occasionally, Nomura would get brought with him.
I really believe that we only have half the matches that Fuminori Abe really does in our database. Because because he, as you said, he literally wrestles anywhere. Anywhere he can find a ring, or even if there's no ring, he'll wrestle there.
That's true. Like, if he ever comes to, like, WXW in Germany or something, you should just promote a show in your backyard, and he'd probably show up for it, you know?
Even like, if I don't invite him, he'll just show up.
No, like, he'll just be there. Like, hey, I heard there's wrestling here. there. Very nice guy as well. His English is not that great. It's limited, but he does speak it, and I've talked to him before, and he's a very nice person. By the way, so a very good guy, Abe. So shout out to him. But he's not my number one. My number one is a team I've teased a little bit, and that is the Strong Hearts team of T-Hawk and Lindemann. And I was thinking about this when I was researching for this award. I was because originally the Astronauts were my pick at number one, but then I looked at it, and T-Hawk and Lindemann's run is completely prolific. Like, even compared to the Astronauts, they've wrestled so many different places, so many different teams, and so many different styles. It made the best of it. Like, those two teams I just named, they're both their best matches were both with Strong Hearts. And Strong Hearts has wrestled all over the place. They even wrestled in AEW once during this year with Shima, believe it or not. They've wrestled in Mexico with The Crash, IWRG. They wrestled in IWA Denver in the you know, Revolver, Pro Wrestling Revolver in Ohio, Warrior Wrestling. They wrestled in 0-1, Super Firebooks. They were in a Super Plasma Death match this year. Obviously, they also had a lot of six-man teams with Shima, obviously, and also Shigehiro Irie, who joined Strong Hearts. They did a lot of great work in DDT. They had a little bit of the OWE stuff, but that's not really that prominent this year. And then they had this big Japan run, which they're on, and I love everything they're involved in. They're another team that wrestles all over the place, and just an incredible run of matches, different styles, different places. And every time I see them, they're doing some of the best stuff. You know, T-Hawk has done great work on his own as well, and Linda Min as well. Like, whether a partner together, they're just a great, great team. And they were my number one pick to me. Like I said, I thought it was going to be Astronauts at first, but when I looked at the year 2020, I ended up going with Strong Hearts, specifically T-Hawk and Linda Min, as my tag team of the year.
That's a great shout, definitely. I do have two more honorable mentions I want to go to. First, Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto. They had the All Asia Tag title earlier this year, but they continued teaming also throughout the Real World Tag League, and I really enjoyed their matches. And then I'm going to bend the rules a little bit here, much like Tokyo Sports does for their best tag team. They sometimes also give the award to a unit. And that's what I'm going to do for my honorable mentions. I am going to the deep indies with Viva Max Cabrones, the trio that right now is holding the UWA World Trios title, Billy Ken Kid, Masamune, and Tsubasa. I was able to actually watch two of their matches, first of which on VKF Halloween Havoc 2020, when they defeated SIH, Gaina, and Goa. And on the Kawanishi Pro Wrestling Festival 2020 in late November, where they defeated the team of Seto Minsoko, Daiki Shimomura, Isami Kodaka, and Ryuchi Sekine. I really like these three together as a unit. They complement each other very well. They are not the youngest anymore, but with this trio, they can certainly show that they still can go.
Well, we've seen before on this show that the rules are optional with some of my picks earlier with Julia, clearly. So you are allowed to break all the rules on your picks.
Let's see how optional the rules are now, Dylan, when you go on to best in-ring performer / most outstanding.
Well, I mean, there's only so many rules you can break with this award because it's pretty straightforward.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, so I think we'll color within the lines on this one. So for me, much like the best bout, it's hard to come up with an answer I would really disagree with. You know, but it's possible. I'm sure we'll look at some of the other people's later on. But we have most outstanding for me. Number three, I went with a little bit of an outside the box pick, something you might not expect. To me, Susumu Yokosuka totally made All Japan bearable the first half of the year with his junior title run. In addition to his run in Dragon Gate, again, that's something I value a lot in my workers, as much like tag teams, is can you have great matches with everyone regardless of style, or are you just doing the same stuff over and over again? Like, sometimes that can downgrade someone for me, personally, and he's somebody that wrestled against so many different people. Sato, I mentioned, an amazing technical match. He had two matches against Sato, which were great. I like the January one better, but he also had a great match in May versus Sato. Akira Francesco was a great match. Okada, he had a match with. Yusuke Okada, that is, in February. Great run there. He had matches at Dragon Gate as part of tag teams and singles matches. And wasn't he in that elimination match today in the final game?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, see? So he's doing everything. Like, singles, tag, multi-man, he's done it all this year in both Dragon Gate and All Japan, and been one of the highlights of both companies. So to me, Susumu, I think, is worth a mention in my top three, and I have him as my number three.
Yeah, great choice.
Number two for me is a man who I mentioned blowing up a doll before earlier on. And he might, and listen, if you have a great comedy match like that, an all-time great match, not to mention a match of the year candidate versus Akiyama, Konosuke Takeshita has to be mentioned in my top three here. And again, I think a lot of people would probably disagree with me on this, especially DDT fans, which would side more with someone like an Endo. But to me, I think Takeshita is the one who carries things in the ring. Never mind character or whatever. And actually, I've been watching this DDT tournament, this KOD, yeah. And I think a lot of his matches have not really lived up to any kind of potential. With apparently being depressed because you lost a match means having really long matches a lot. And like his match versus Akito was so bad, I thought. Like that kind of knocked him out of my number one spot. Unfortunately, like so much stalling. What was he thinking? Oh, and what was anybody thinking with that match? And those are two guys I love. Akito is another of like the best in DDT. If I hadn't watched it, this is how you know I actually watch these matches. If I just go by on paper, I would have said it was a great match. But unfortunately, it wasn't. So I was not a big fan of all that. But regardless of that, you had him great in the All Out at Juretsu series. Again, multi-man tag team matches. You had tag team matches, you know, against all kinds of people. Now, even some hardcore matches, we talked about the crazy match with Yoshihiko, which was technically a last man standing match. But he also had a tag team hardcore match with Shunma Katsumata versus the Damnation Team, before Shunma turned, obviously. Great KOD match versus Tanaka. Well, I thought that was a pretty good match. You had the big six-man tag again versus Strong Hearts, the team of the year for me, or I guess the Damn Hearts, since Endo was there instead of Shima. That was him, Katsumata, and Ino. Up and down, great year, I thought, against all kinds of different people. Again, another guy who has wrestled in many different styles. Not the perfect year, but still. And also, he did wrestle Hub in a match. And him and Billy Kenkin versus Hub and Yuki Ueno in October. So, if you wrestle Hub, you are a Wrestler of the Year candidate in my book. More than any other criteria, that's what I follow. But yeah, he's my number two. I think he's had a great year. Like I said, maybe a controversial pick, but I thought he was great. Number one is, I think, I went chalk here. Maybe Konosuke Takeshita. Susumu was a little outside the box, but I went with Go as my number one most outstanding. He doesn't have necessarily the variety of matches like that someone like Takeshita had. And even earlier on in the year, remember when he was champion, there was like 2 months or so that he wasn't even wrestling at all in there. You know, like he missed a couple of tours with injury. But if you just look at his title run, that's the biggest matches you can have with the world title. And pretty much all of them, he knocked them out of the park. Even one that you might not expect, like Akitoshi Saito, I thought was a great match. If you look at the story, again, not just the wrestling, but the story they told with the Misawa Memorial Show, he did a great job. He had to carry these long matches against guys like Sugira, guys like Nakajima. The match with Kaito, and all three of those matches, Kaito, Sugira, and Nakajima got picks from the fans and us as Match of the Year candidates. He had the match versus Fujita, which was the meme match, I guess you could say, of the year on there. But then he wrestled good in it when it was time to stop staring at each other. He did a great job in that. You had the Axis team. They didn't have as many prolific matches as other years because he was busy with the world title. But I thought he had the most standout matches as a champion, the most big matches. And he's the one that I picked as my most outstanding in-ring wrestler of the year.
What about you, WH?
Okay, so number three, I was thinking about this. I'm going to go with Shingo Takagi, just outstanding performer, just one of the most consistent people on the New Japan roster. Also, one of the most consistently booked people on the New Japan roster, which counts for a lot in that company, for me at least. I thought he had a great G1. I thought his title reign with the NEVER title has been fantastic as well. And obviously, it's continuing into Wrestle Kingdom, so I expect him to drag a pretty good match out of Jeff Cobb for that. Number two is Yuji Okabayashi. I think he's done a stellar job, not only as, you know, representative of Big Japan Pro Wrestling's strong division, but also in 2AW. He had some really great title matches when he was the 2AW champion. And just, again, you're going to hear this word a lot from me, consistency. Just a very, very consistent performer and just always having stellar matches, in my opinion. But my number one guy is from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Again, it's Tomohiro Ishii. And this guy has to be the most consistent, underappreciated person in all of wrestling, especially in his own promotion, that he has everyone's best match in the G1. He's involved in like good tag team matches, both two-man tags or six-man tags. And I can't think of anyone more deserving of this award, in my opinion, of the wrestling that I watch. I don't watch, you know, DDT or as much Rengi as anyone else. But like to me, like I do watch a lot of New Japan still. He's definitely up there. I can't think of anyone better for me this year than Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, you know, I have kind of a mix between the two of you, and I just looked up the metrics. You mentioned Shingo Takagi. He pops up 10 times in the cage match guide of the top 100 matches of the year. And then there's Tomohiro Ishii. He pops up 13 times in this top 100 list, and I think that goes to show how great this guy is, and I don't think we have to go much deeper into this. Everybody knows, as you said, Tomohiro Ishii always has the best match of each performer, or usually has the best match of each performer. And that's why I put him on my number three. On number two, just for the reasons that Dylan called here, Konosuke Takeshita, I still think that he had good matches in the Deakin Grand Prix, but I agree that some of them could have been much better. But still, he is so versatile, and he showed that this year alone in the two matches that we debated, the Akiyama match and the Yoshihiko match, in two completely different roles, he excelled. And for that, he deserves the number two spot and the number one spot for me as well. Best in-ring performer, most outstanding, definitely Go Shiozaki.
Listen, first of all, we didn't debate those matches. We agreed.
They were freaking awesome. Well, we kind of discussed how they went.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we discussed them. Anybody who wants to debate me on those matches,
yeah,
don't debate me on that Yoshihiko match, first of all, because that was the greatest comedy match ever. Mm-hmm. The Akiyama match I can listen to, but I will not listen to any arguments against the Yoshihiko match. But yeah, I thought those were all great picks. Ishii. He's another one of these guys. He's kind of like the guy that I always think of when somebody says best or most underrated. Mm. It's like, who really thinks Ishii sucks? let's be honest. Like who really thinks that? No, unless you're just like the ultimate hipster of wrestling, I feel like. No offense if anyone out there thinks Ishii sucks, but I would like to know your reasoning behind that. Show me the papers.
Then we have a debate.
Yeah, then we will have a debate if that happens. But yeah, see, so that's a great pick. Obviously, we agreed on both of our top two picks. So, like, clearly we're on the same page. Great minds think alike. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with WH's picks either. Shingo and Ishii.
Absolutely.
Both great picks.
Okabayashi, I think, is a great pick too. I was a big fan of his 2AW title reign as well. I kind of think that he dropped off a little bit in the summer, but then came back with his title reign as the Strong World Heavyweight Champion. So I would put him on my number four. And going to some of the listeners, we got a new ballot that just came in a couple of minutes ago as we're recording. Best in-ring performer here is overall Mayu Iwatani from the user at StardomCast.
Yeah, hey, I want to shout out StardomCast because they messaged me after our Hana Kimura episode we did earlier in the year, and they said some amazingly kind words about that. I've never forgotten that. So Stardom Cast, I've listened to their show too. Great job covering that promotion. So thank you for sending in your picks for the awards as well. And not all of his picks or their picks were Stardom either.
They
were very well rounded run there. So good stuff there.
Matthias mentions Takuya Nomura as the best in-ring performer. Pincente has also Go Shiozaki. Saki Klaus, also Mayu Iwatani. Klabauta, Tomohiro Ishii. KSJ, Shingo Takagi, just like WH mentioned him in his top three. And Dominic also Shingo Takagi, whereas Puro Reviews mentions Eita as the best in-ring performer.
Interesting pick there.
Interesting pick. I wouldn't agree, but I can see that from the Dragon Gate point of view.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we go to the two remaining awards. And before we go to them, I quickly want to explain that again. What you, Dylan, and I always say about the MVP. We approach this from the perspective, what if this performer hadn't been in said company where that performer is right now? where would the company be? How much of a difference would there be? And that is how I approached my three choices for the Yoshi MVP. My number three pick is from Actress Girls, their champion Miyuki Takase. I do think that the company would look vastly different if Takase, after Himekawa, would also leave the company. And it would need Actress Girls to rebuild or to build a new top star. And that would be difficult from scratch. They do have good, great talent there, but they don't have the talent on that level that Miyuki Takase is at right now. So she's my number three. Then I picked Julia from Stardom. Once again, also, I just think that she is so incredibly marketable that there would be a difference if she wouldn't be in Stardom. Of course, the company in and of itself may be a draw, but Julia still, in my opinion, is has to be put up there. But then my number one pick is from Tokyo Yoshi Pro, Yuka Sakazaki, the reigning princess champion. I do think when you imagine Tokyo Yoshi Pro without her, it still would be a very entertaining and a very successful company, but she is the top level performer that Tokyo Yoshi Pro has right now, and that also connects with the audience so well that they were able to really broaden their audience in the recent 2 years. Yeah, well, I don't know. WH, maybe you want to go first with Yoshi MVP.
Yoshi MVP. Okay, so I kind of looked at it a similar way to you, Strega, like who's important to their promotion, but also kind of like who's been keeping their name in the news, whether it's through like things that they've been doing or the matches that they've been having. So number three for me, and I want to put this out there that I do not watch as much Joshi as either of you two, but I do try to expand my horizons with Joshi. But for me, number three is Sari. I think, you know, just getting out there, she didn't get to go to, you know, WWE, NXT, whatever. She's going to go soon, but like while she was in Japan, she made the most of her time, and I think she really helped the kind of the indie scene a lot with her presence being in Japan during 2020. Number two is Arisa Nakajima, and I don't watch that much Seed Ring, but you know, like if Dylan really hypes up something, and I know he hypes up Arisa Nakajima a lot, so I would, and some other friends of mine who watch more Joshi than I do, like would say, you should watch this match with Arisa Nakajima. And she's really made Seed Ring a very interesting company as far as for my limited exposure to it. But number one is Julia, just because like I do tend to watch a lot of Stardom. And I feel if she wasn't in the company, it would look a lot different in 2020, because I think it would, they would be a little lost with the focus of pushing her so hard. And I think she deserves the push, and I think she's lived up to the push, and I think she's going to be very, very important to Stardom come the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. I just want to say about your pick, Striga, mm-hmm. I really like the Takase pick for Actress Girls. I think one of the best talents, you know, kind of the unearthed gems of the Joshi scene, because the company is small, they don't air that much. But whenever you can get the chance to see Takase, wherever she's at, she's wrestled in Wave, OZ Academy, Seedling. You know, she's wrestled in multiple places this year, so she's easy to watch if you go to check it out. Great wrestler, and a great tag team wrestler, too, with her team with Haruka Umasaki, Luminous. They were one of the better Joshi tag teams of the year, too. So I think that's a really good pick. And like you said, they're still a really small company, and she's pretty much the top of the heap for them, and I think they're doing some good stuff there. So I really like that pick. Sakazaki, I had as my number three as well, for all the reasons that you mentioned. I think she's done a great job elevating Tokyo Joshi Pro. She's had the title all year and had a great run with it, doing some great things with the title. And that match with Mizuki, I know a lot of people had as a match of the year candidate. I wasn't quite that high on it, but it was still a great match. And the main event of their biggest show of the year. And she was kind of the catalyst of the company for this whole year. So I think that's a great pick, too. She was in my top three. Number two, for me, I kind of disagree with you guys about Julia being the MVP. I thought Iwatani was more the MVP of Stardom, carrying the red belt. Julia was hyped in terms of promotional features and things like that. They had the big run with Tom Nakano, but in terms of who was actually at the top of the company, Iwatani was the one I felt more so. If you look at their main events, whenever they both had big matches, Mayu was the main event, not Julia, on the similar shows. They both had pushed pretty strongly. Like you said, Julia has been the white belt champion and had a great run. I think Iwatani, I've said this when I was reviewing on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, when I reviewed every show for the 5-star Grand Prix, Mayu's kind of a victim of her own success in a lot of ways, because like we already know that she's so good and her standards are so high. Like her having a great run for her is like, okay. Like the, you know, Mayu doing Mayu things. It's kind of like how Ishii is at New Japan sometimes. It's like where he wrestles so good, everyone says he's the greatest in the company all these times. But then whenever it's time for Wrestler of the Year or anything like that, Ishii never gets voted for that for whatever reason. It's always somebody else. And I feel like these guys are just kind of – and girls in Mayu's case, it's like she's so good at such a high level, she has to do that much more to really jump out at you and impress you, you know? But if you look at her run, I think she's had a great year throughout the year, and a red belt champion throughout most of it until finally putting over. That's something I really value. Last year, I thought that Nanai was the MVP of Seedling. She didn't wrestle this year, obviously. But her title reign was used to put over Takumi Iroha. And here, Iwatani's title reign was not only great, but it was used to put over Yutami Hayashishida. She had the matches with Iroha, which were two of the most talked about matches of the year. And she was a great performer in the B block of the 5-star Grand Prix. Like a lot of what she did, she had the dark match too that Julia was also a part of at the start of the year. They're gonna have another dark match at Wrestle Kingdom this year as well. Stardom is, who knows what that's gonna be. So she's done a lot. Mayu's my pick, but Julia's had a great year too. I just thought Mayu was more valuable of the two. But my number one, again, I always hype Arisa Nakajima because she's an awesome wrestler, like to be honest. And I always love watching her. And she's a great worker. But in terms of the actual MVP of Seedling, to me, I can't overlook the fact that Yoshiko has become such a celebrity outside of Joshi because of her TikTok. And I was looking at some of those live streams they were having in Seedling, and it's like the difference was night and day between her breakout on TikTok to what it was after that. And she had great matches with Arisa Nakajima, actually teaming with Sari now that Sari's back. Sari missed a lot of the year during the pandemic and stuff, but she's back now. She had a great run at the start of the year, too. And now Yoshiko's teaming with Sari as well. You know, wherever she's at, it feels like the company is totally built around this one person. And with Stardom, you can kind of debate. Is it Mayu? Is it Julia? Yutami is the champion right now. You've got a bunch of different people. And Nanae's taking a step back. Nakajima's taking a step back. And it feels like now the company completely is dedicated to her. Ice Ribbon, same deal, where you have like Maya Yuki, Suzu, Fujimoto. They're all up there. You can't really say there's a definitive one person carrying the show. And in Seedling, Yoshiko is like everything built around her right now in 2020. And she's wrestled freelance too and all other different promotions. So I always enjoy her wrestling. She's done a lot of great things in the ring, so I had to me, it's hard for me to overlook her when you consider her popularity, even though I think some other people might have had better in-ring years. And I you know, just like everyone we mentioned, Mayu, Sakazuki, great in-ring years, and Nakajima is my favorite worker, clearly. And Seedling's a great company. That's something I always recommend for everybody, because their roster is small, but they bring in all these outsiders to have great shows. And so I always, whenever Seedling makes tape there, I'm always on top of that and want to watch them. So I've watched the entire year, and that's my pick for MVP, because I think she brought the fans in more than anybody else. So even if it's because of outside the ring stuff, I can't overlook that.
It's really a very high quality company, and the celebrity reason there, I can see definitely. I really like all of your picks. I especially like the Sari pick that WH made. I looked it up what she did this year, and basically she wrestled for every Yoshi company except for Stardom and Ice Ribbon. And as WH said, whenever she pops up somewhere, she has a great match and elevates the performers. She, for example, had this match with Miyuki Takase on October 5. She had a match with Akari on Pure J's show on November 3, a match with Hibiki on Marvelous October 26. Whenever she pops up there, she has these great matches with these performers, and elevating them helps them a lot. She also still is the Beyond the Sea Tag Team Champion. I wonder when she's going to lose that title before departing to the U.S.
They just won that. Yeah, like her Yoshi.
Yeah, but doesn't she have to lose the title before she goes to WWE?
I mean, you would think so.
You would think so.
Like, you know, I'm not, listen, I'm not trying to tell Seedling what to do. I'm here. Listen, as far be it from me, Nanae Takahashi, the winner of every Nanae Takahashi award, yet again, for 3 years running, she won every single one. So I will not tell her what to do or how to book.
Okay. Yoshi MVP for Stardom Cast, Mayu Iwatani for Matias, Rina Yamashita, great shout out. Also in the deathmatch ranks, active now in Freedoms and Dove Pro.
She was in my honorable mentions. Yeah. I love Rina Yamashita, a great worker.
Vincente mentions Yuka Sakazaki. Saki Klaus mentions, again, Mayu Iwatani. Klabauta, Yuka Sakazaki, just like I did. KSJ has Zuzu Suzuki. And I thought about Zuzu Suzuki because in her title reign, she has had defenses against young talent like Tai Honma and Haruka Umesaki and headline shows with them and drawing very, very good crowds with that. But still, though, there are these performers like Fujimoto on the cards that also draw well. So I wouldn't necessarily classify her as an MVP yet.
Suzu would have been my MVP if she hadn't lost the title.
Dominic, no Yoshi MVP. And for poor reviews, also Rina Yamashita. Okay, so WH, MVP now.
MVP. Okay, so number three, I'm going to go with Ada, just because I think he's, you know, him being the Dreamgate champion and him being the leader of Red has really made Dragon Gate a lot better this year. Like, he's brought focus to the heel side of that company. And, you know, like, Dragon Gate is a company that you need really strong heels, especially you need the leader of the heel faction to be really strong. And I think he's done a marvelous job in that role. And number two, I'm going to go with Go Shizaki. Yeah, I think, you know, he won the title in January. He's still the champion. He's had an incredible title reign. He had a great N1 tournament. But, like, there are some of his matches, like, I really don't love that Shigeru match. I gave it a 4.25 rating. I think it's a lot. It's really long.
What a terrible rating. 4.25.
Yeah, but no, but it's like, everyone's going to go 5 or whatever, right? Yeah. 4.75, 5 or something like that. I didn't go as high as, like, I didn't hate it, but, like, I didn't love it as much as other people. And I like the Nakajima match a lot. That's a 4.75 match. But I don't know. I'm not as compelled by his story of, like, being always injured and fighting through the injuries to you know, being a fighting champion. So, like, I like it, but it doesn't put me on the edge. Like, I think he's very important to Noah, obviously, this year. And I think he's a big part of their success. But for me, like, I just got to go with, like, whose year did I enjoy more? Whose matches did I enjoy more consistently? And that's, you know, Hiromu Takahashi. And I think if he wasn't in New Japan this year, I would probably just dismiss New Japan outright. But, like, him being in the company, like, has brought enjoyment to, like, and along with some other people on the roster. I think it's a very, very strong roster. It's probably one of the best rosters in the world. I don't like the booking of the main event scene, but, like, I like his booking, and I tend to think he probably got the best, you know, outing out of Evil, out of anyone. So you got to give him credit for that. But yeah, I just like Hiromu just a tad bit more than Go Shizaki. It's not like it's like there's a wide gap between the two in my heart or in my mind. But, you know, I just give the edge to Hiromu Takahashi. But, you know, goes very close to being number one.
Yeah, I can understand your reasoning behind that, although I don't really share it, I clearly think that this year was Goshi Ozaki's best year in his career, and it reflects when you look at what the listeners say. I think we have 6 votes for Goshi Ozaki for MVP / Wrestler of the Year.
Every one of them voted for Go.
No, not everyone. There is one vote for... Oh, no.
Everyone
voted for Goshi Ozaki. Yeah, that's
true. I don't mind being the outlier, and that's the thing.
It's fine. It's totally fine, and I like that you looked at it from a different perspective there, too. But I do think that when you cut out Goshi Ozaki out of Pro Wrestling Noah's 2020, the company wouldn't be in the talks as much as it is right now, especially amongst Western fans. There has been a completely new fan base. Even in 2020, Noah has gained a lot of new fans, and I think that Goshi Ozaki has a lot to do with that. And so I also put Goshi Ozaki up on my number one position. And then, I approached this from the perspective, where would the company be if that wrestler wouldn't be there? And so, underneath Goshi Ozaki, on my number two, I have 2 AWs, Ayato Yoshida. Because I believe that this guy is the one reason that 2 AW... Maybe not the one reason, but the main reason that 2AW gets some shine in some moments. We talked about that the Kaji Tomato and Shango Tag Team did it earlier this year. And now, I think with his title reign as the Openweight Champion, he gives the company shine. I recently watched the match against Tank Nagai and raved about it, how much I loved the match. So if Ayato Yoshida wasn't in 2AW, I think the company would be completely different. And he is the one that represents the company to the outside, has wrestled in All Japan earlier this year too, would have been in the Champion Carnival if the pandemic hadn't hit All Japan. So this guy, I think, is worthy of an MVP. And also on my number 3, Toru Sugiura from Pro Wrestling Freedoms, so the King of Freedoms world champion. Jun Kasai was out for the first half of 2020. Freedoms didn't run from March until June. But still, as the King of Freedoms world champion, Toru Sugiura headlined most of the shows in 2020 and also put on extremely great performances in his death matches and basically carried the company on his back for a lot of 2020. In his matches and in the main events. A lot of stories have been revolving around Toru Sugiura, and if he wasn't in Stardom, the company would look different. So that's my top 3, and I want to talk about Eita a bit too. I did not choose him for my MVP Wrestler of the Year. Going back to my half-year awards, I mentioned that he could be up there on the MVP list. At that point, he had won the King of Gate tournament, but we didn't know that he would go on to win the Dreamgate championship. Then I thought that the Dreamgate title run was really cut short, which is why I didn't consider him for my MVP. But I see that as the leader of this heel unit, he can be in consideration of such. So that's my choices. How about you, Dylan?
Yeah, my choices for my top 3, we can get into it, because I have some thoughts on you guys' picks, as I have thoughts on everything in life. So, I went with a little bit of a curveball here with Akiyama as my number 3, because I think Akiyama, when he went to DDT, he changed everything around him in a way that others didn't, and Endo has been a champion there for a while. You had Tanaka earlier on in the year. Takeshita has had a lot of great storylines. But to me, Akiyama is the one that changed the company the most by his appearances. With all of his fresh matches, we had this feud with Takeshita, which I have absolutely loved. And I think he legitimately adds something to that company that wasn't there before. And we've seen it, not just in his matches that he's had, but the way he elevates other people around him. Guys like Watase, who was like a total nothing before Akiyama got there, and he suddenly improved as soon as he started hanging around Akiyama more. You have guys like Oishi, who is always a talented guy to me, but wasn't really doing anything of note. And then this Junretsu thing gives him a whole new lease on life. Great feuds, great matches. He's elevated so many people and given them credibility that they didn't have when he wasn't around, in my opinion. So I love what he's done. It's like when he came in, I think everybody had this expectations that he wasn't going to be in the main events. He was going to do what he was doing in All Japan, pretty much, which was undercard, dumb crap, pretty much. But no, that's not what's happened. At DDT, he's elevated his game and shown that, man, he may be older, but he's still the man, still one of the best going. And to me, he's the one that's really been the standout to me in DDT. Although, you know, to me, Takeshita's always up there. But to me, Akiyama, just because there were so many fresh matches and so many things that he added, I put him as my number three in my MVP award.
I think it's a great choice with Akiyama because you mentioned Endo and Takeshita. And if you think about these two, if you took them out of DDT, would the company be different? And I don't think that it would be much different. Of course, they would be missed as performers, but would they really make a difference in style or in elevating others, much like Akiyama did? I don't think so.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think Takeshita had some interesting feuds and stuff, but one of them was with Akiyama and his group. So, you know, you have to really give that credit as well. Although, obviously, I will always love the Yoshihiko making All Out All Dead in their feud. Maybe Yoshihiko could be an MVP candidate. But no, like, to me, Akiyama, I agree with what you said. If you take everyone, all three of those people, you choose the timelines where each one retires on January 1st for whatever reason, I think Akiyama makes the biggest difference. So to me, I would have to go with that. At number two, I went with Eita. I agree with WH's pick there. I also kind of agree with you, actually, though, Striga, that his reign did get cut short. And I think Dragon Gate is more of an ensemble cast, almost, that makes things work more than one true MVP. But I do think his run, like him winning the title, was a catalyst. Kind of like what we said earlier with the Ishida and Okuda feud. Eita winning the title was the catalyst of making Red that big, big faction they needed to have. Like, you kind of went to WH's point that you need to have a strong heel faction in Dragon Gate. And I think if he doesn't win that title, even though it was a few months that he had it, you also have to consider the build-up to him winning too, which took place throughout a couple of months as well, at King of Gate. So I think, to me, he's a worthy pick as an MVP, and I agree with WH, actually. He's my number two pick here. So my number one, I did say Go, to be honest, but I struggled with this the more I thought about it, to be honest with you. I was thinking about it because we had these conversations the last few weeks talking about Go as Tokyo Sports MVP, Budokan Hall, and all of these things. And he's had great matches. This has nothing to do with work rate, you know, because he's done a great job in all of his wrestling. And to me, that's kind of where I would have to kind of swerve a little bit. And to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, even though WH went against him already, I'm going for him, is I still do think he's the MVP if you just look at his work overall. And like you said, what he's done, he's, again, I use this word a lot, but he was the catalyst for a lot of the storylines in NOAH this year and a lot of the excitement and a lot of the emotional response. And you can't take that away from him. But doesn't it say something that if you look at this year-long title reign, like things were going really good. You know, before that with Kaito, they had the Sumo Hall show, and everything was looking pretty decent, you know, at the start of the year. They did this entire long title reign for Go, and as we speculated, you know, if the traditional speculation, if you look at the booking, is true, what does it say that ultimately the goals of this title reign have all failed? Like, if you really look at it, like, so here's what's happened during this title reign. The Go and Nakajima feud has kind of been blown. Like, I mean, like, yeah, it was a good feud and emotional, all of that, but the ending wasn't what it should have been, in all honesty, and it got blown away in like 2 months, like when it could have been a longer, much longer drawn out thing. And it's going to be hard to replicate that emotion again if they want to go back to Nakajima as a championship contender. And he feels a lot lower than he was 6 months ago or at the start of the year, even. It doesn't feel like he's on the cusp of winning the title anytime soon, which I think many people would have predicted. The Tokyo MVP, he didn't win that. And obviously, a lot of people would probably say that's BS reasons. But at the end
of the
day,
I don't really say you can fault him for that, because there was no way he was going to win that.
Well, but it's not about his fault, though. It's about the booking. At the end of the day, like, why would you even want to even attempt that? When what you said, ultimately, you were completely right. No matter what you do, they're going to go with the New Japan guy over the Noah guy. So, like, that goal of their title reign has failed. That's two failures. Three, Budokan. Everything we've been talking about. At the end of the day, and this is a what if, this has yet to be proven one way or the other, but if he drops that title to Muto, what was the point of this whole title reign at the end of the day? So that's three failures right there. And, like, there's no successes other than having great matches.
I absolutely don't agree that a title drop to Muta would completely erase everything that he did during his title reign. I don't think
that. What did he do? He had great matches.
Yeah. As I said, I think he's drawn in a lot of new fans for Pro Wrestling Noah, and I thought he's tied a lot of people to this company through the emotions that he.
I mean, has he? His shows didn't sell out with Sugera and Nakajima.
Well, yes, and then you can point to any other performer, and their shows haven't sold out either.
Okay, so, like, you know.
I think that's no counter-argument to Goshi Ozaki if that goes for the other performers as well.
Well, we don't know that. You know, at the end of the day, you know, to WH's point, and I kind of hate to take a side here, because I don't agree that Hiromu was the MVP, but his title match versus Evil was the only one that did the maximum capacity for Evil's title reign, even above Naito's. At the end of the day, like, he had more interest in his title reign. To me, there's no evidence that Go has drawn in more people.
And then I'm going to go to your argument, Dylan.
Yeah.
And what happened then with Hiromu Takahashi? He was in heavyweight for one day.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying Hiromu was the MVP. Like, I disagree with that point. But I'm saying that at the end of the day, Go. Like, to me, there is no good choice for MVP, which is why I'm kind of going with Go. At the end of the day, like, Go is my number one pick. I'm kind of arguing against myself here, because, like, your point is true. Like, what you said is totally true. Nobody else has really made that case either, like, at the end of the day. So I think you have to go with him, because, like you said, your points on the emotion and the in-ring work is all good. But at the end of the day, I feel like this classic reign is going to be, much like his entire career, is unfortunately going to be tarnished. First of all, I think the pandemic does have a lot to do with it, and that's not anybody's fault at the end of the day, and that's tough for him to overcome. But at the end of the day, just like I said, I think if you could go back and do it all over again, he should have dropped the title to Nakajima, and, like, that would have been a lot better than whatever they're going to do with Muto at Budokan Hall. I just think I can't get that out of my mind that this company is so poorly, like, to go there, like, with Muto. Whatever excuse, a lot of people have speculated, and I do think that this is going to happen. I think that this ultimately is a setup for Kaito to get the title back over Muto and get his win back, ultimately. But that's not, to me, that's not worth it. Kaito was doing great on his own already. Like, you didn't have to go to Muto to do that. Go was doing great on his own already. Why do you have to do all this stuff, and you sacrifice someone like Nakajima? It's going to be a long time before he gets back to that top tier. Like, you know, like, maybe the stuff we speculated about was you saying the aggression should get back together. That's as mid-card as you could get at the end of the day. And he went from the hottest star to a mid-card guy because they decided to blow this angle for really to give him the MVP, which didn't happen at the end of the day. And like you said, was never going to happen. So I really do think we have to call into question the booking even of the heavyweights if we're going to be fair about Noah, that ultimately this title reign didn't accomplish anything. When you look at it, other than having, I mean, he's an amazing worker, and he always has been, even back to the All Japan days when he was a Triple Crown champion. He had some great matches, and he will always have those. And he got talked about a lot by Western fans. I think you're totally right on that. But in terms of bringing fans in, I don't really see it that much, to be honest, other than the Abima numbers, which have looked strong, and they're running Budokan, and we'll see if that works. Like I said, this whole argument remains to be seen based on what happens there. But to me, I really struggled with this because I really thought about it, and I was like, man, this was a great title reign in ring, but I think it could have been handled a lot better overall than to lead to this Muto thing, which is a 2021 thing anyway, and that's why I ultimately went with Go as the MVP. But I do want to throw this out there to kind of you know, give a little bit of a devil's advocate opinion right now.
If I could just say, like, if he loses the title to Muto at Budokan, I don't think it devalues the overall title reign necessarily, but I do think it's a failure on Nosawa's part as a booker to not actually have him lose to the right person, which would be Kaito Kimiya. That's who should beat him. You know, bring their story full circle and show like Kiyomiya's growth and establish him as the ace. And that title reign should be taken by Kiyomiya, who's the future of that company, not by Muto, who is like the idol of Nosawa. And it's just nepotism booking, which I think, you know, plagues a lot of Nosawa's booking in the company.
Do you think Muto's a draw to Noah?
No, he's not. Listen, if he was a draw, why isn't Russell 1 still around in some form or capacity? Because he's not a draw. He hasn't been a draw in years. I think the last time he was a draw was like probably before 2010, maybe, you know, like, yeah, I can't think of, unless you give me a specific example post 2010, like, oh yeah, he drew this house in, like, you know, Sumo Hall for All Japan. I can't think of him being a draw. He's not going to draw anything. Like, it has to be a really strong card overall for that show to draw.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. Pre-2010, New Japan always brought them in to draw a crowd in the Tokyo Dome, and it worked. But post that, nothing pops up in my mind that I would point to.
And that was 10 years ago, what we're talking about. Yeah. And we're 10 years later, like you said. Some fans don't want to hear that for some reason about Muto. But like, your point is the ultimate like down like guard to any defense of Muto. Is like, if he was that big of a deal, Russell 1 wouldn't be dead now at the end of the day. So it's really hard for me to buy that. But, you know, like I said, the title reign was great, and he deserves MVP for in this crazy year of the pandemic. But I do think the booking is more to blame. Like, I'm not trying to disregard Go as a worker at all, or even a wrestler at all, because I think everything he's done character-wise has been really good, and he's done a great job. But to me, I do think you have to look at the booking of all of this. I really think Nakajima should have won. You could have gone back to Kaito later on, you know, and he's doing great. Like I said, unlike the other aces, you know, like Kaito, or not Kaito, but Kento or Okada, it's like Kaito's done a great job even without the title. He's had a really good year working, and he's totally fine, like in his own lane, and he could still take that run, and you could have had Nakajima as a top heel. And now I feel like he's so downgraded that you lost a potential top star that maybe, to me, is more charismatic than Go, and had a hotter run in him than even Go did, if you look at them on paper. But unfortunately, that I feel like they sacrificed that, and I can't get over them.
If he has a really good tag team title reign with Inamura, and he elevates Inamura and that tag team, and they have a good run, like, I think like Kiyomiya will be fine, and you kind of like pivot him towards back to being the, you know, GHC heavyweight champion again from that.
Absolutely. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Kaito's done a great job. Like I said, he doesn't need the title right now. He already had a long title reign, and it felt like they were on the right path there. And I think this Go reign did eventually end up working out in a good way for them. I just think that there's going to be a lot of questions. A year from now, we'll know the answers to a lot of these more Absolutely. Than now. So all we can say is by the performances, and at the end of the day, I agree with the fans, and I agree with you, Striga. He's number one. At the end of the day, Hiromu, like you said, to your point, Striga, it's like he had that one moment, and, you know, unfortunately, he's cursed in this junior division. Unfortunately, that means, you know, it's hard for anybody to make a difference there. But he had some great performances too, so I have no heat with Hiromu. I think he's a great performer. Just for MVP, he wouldn't have been my pick, in all honesty, just because of that reason. But I, like I said, at the end of the day, is there this is one of the weirder years that we've ever seen. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to make an interesting pick. But Go is the consensus. And, you know, when I did my poll, I had hundreds of people vote on that before Tokyo Sports came out. And it was like 90% or something that Go would be the better choice than Naito. So really interesting stuff there.
Yeah, it's an unprecedented year. So and I guess the discussion really shows it that the metrics that we usually apply for this don't really work. We can't really point to the drawing power amidst all this stuff. A lot of companies have gone away from even announcing crowd numbers, so that metrics doesn't work out right now. So we have to go to mostly what our feeling says about each performer. And I do think that we, throughout these awards, throughout these over 3 hours that we've done the show now have pointed out to most Japanese companies, a wide range of different names were pointed out here. And I once again think that this show has so much variety that each listener can pick their favorites and maybe go back to, I don't know, watch the run that Mammoth Hosodaki and Violento Jack had as King of Freedom's tag champions, whatever you want to do. There's a lot that we covered here, a lot of ground that we covered, and I'm really glad that the two of you were there for it. WH, is there anything else that you want to point out?
Not really. I mean, like, you know, it's been a crazy year, you know, for everyone, not just in wrestling, but just the world in general. And, you know, I'm happy that pro wrestling was able to exist this year, because I think it's one of the things that a lot of us could find solace in and find some joy in the overall world. And I'm hoping, like, you know, I really do feel that 2021 is going to be a better year overall, and I really looking forward to what's going to be happening in wrestling, especially in Japanese wrestling in 2021. I think there's a lot of things poised to be exciting in 2021. So yeah, I'm looking forward to like talking about it with people on, you know, like post Perez, but also like with you guys here at the Eastern Lariat.
You know, I think there's one thing to say about that. I totally agree with what you said, WH. I think 2021 is going to be a big year for everybody. But even in this crazy year, look at all the stuff we talked about. We went 3 hours talking about all the great wrestlers and the great wrestling. You know, there was no negative awards or anything like that on the show. It was all good stuff. And like, we had such a great variety, so much going on, that I think it says something about how great wrestling can be, even in down times and crazy times like that. I think that wrestling is just very important to me myself personally, and also obviously all my friends here, you guys, the listeners, everybody. Really showed out, and I do want to thank everybody for sending in their votes for there's a late term, but we still got a good amount of people that came in there, so we really appreciate that. I know you feel the same, Strig, but most of all, I'm really happy to do the show with you guys and have you guys here. Couldn't have asked for two better running mates for this.
Great final words, Dylan. Thank you. And I also want to thank the listeners for sending in their ballots. Want to thank the listeners for listening to the show. And also want to thank the supporters for supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/EasternLariat, as Dylan had mentioned before.
I just want to say one more thing before we get out of here. I think there's only one way we can end this. There's one more thing that the people need to know, Strigger. And that is, everybody knows that Christmas is coming up. You've already lost your bet for last Christmas already. So, WH, you combated Striga on Twitter and said that your karaoke version of Last Christmas is the best of all time. Will you send us out with a rendition of Last Christmas to break Striga's streak?
That's not going to happen publicly. If we are in Japan... The two of us are in Japan in a Japanese karaoke box room, you will hear my rendition of Last Christmas. Until such time, it's never being publicly broadcast. I do not do karaoke in public. I do karaoke with friends only.
What a Grinch.
you have to choose your spots wisely, I think. And WH knows where his drawing power is, and
good point there.
So he'll go whenever he feels like it. So.
If you have a new Patreon tier, like we'll call it the Kawada tier, because he's turned out to be a really great singer. Yeah, the Kawada tier, $100. Sure. You have to be a member for 6 months, then you might be able to hear me sing on that tier for you guys.
God. Oh my God! What a wonderful idea! How can we go out any other way?
Nice try, Dylan, but it wasn't going to happen.
I tried it. I did it for the people.
I
did it for the people.
I know. So, to the listeners, thank you all for listening. Have a great Christmas, and goodbye.
Sayonara. Merry Christmas.
This is the MLW Radio Network.